Recorded live.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of the Virtual Talk Show, produced by Married Men Don't Talk, the talk show with a top-selling book and an app for your Android smartphones. We come your way every Tuesday night from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, but you can get more info about this show by visiting our website, householdstress.com. Listeners can participate in one of our live weekly talk shows by calling in or logging on to householdstress.com from your personal computer as an anonymous guest. Phone lines are open right now, but this show is strictly for men only. So call into the hottest talk show in America. Now, we have a couple of rules, and they are absolutely no profanity and no politics, and more importantly, no racial stuff. This show is apolitical and race neutral so that we can make sure that any man can feel comfortable on our show. And furthermore, fellas, this ain't Bible study. We just wanted you just to be able to come to our show as a man, and that is it. This virtual talk show always presents the hottest topics for discussion, and tonight is no different. Tonight's topic is 3D, the disengaged and disappearing dad. Wow. My name is Rodney, and I'll be your pilot and a ventriloquist for the evening, and I might even DJ a little bit tonight, but more on that later. I've got a lot of material, and the hope is that I can get this plane off the ground and ultimately land on a safe conclusion. This is a fluid conversation, so if you do have something to say, please feel free to do so, or if you just prefer to listen, that's absolutely fine as well. But please try to hang on until the end because you'll definitely want to hear the conclusion to this episode. All right, with all of that said, let's get started. A growing number of children have no relationship with their fathers. In a 1991 survey, that's right, 1991, the National Commission on Children described the father-child relationship as frequently tenuous and all too often non-existent. And this is consistent with the larger attitude towards fathers and father figures in movies and on television. From The Simpsons to The Family Guy, fathers stand out for their ineptitude, reluctance, or absence amid a growing crowd of single mothers, widows, all-girl clans, and unconventional and dysfunctional families. Father knows best, not in a long time. But I want to play something for you guys and see if y'all recognize it. It's about 30 seconds. Listen to this. So, does anybody recognize what that song was from?
It's The Cosby Show.
The Cosby Show. Thank you. You're right on it, brother. Absolutely. So, what happened to the dad-glorifying shows like The Cosby Show, The Waltons, The Brady Bunch, Leave It to Beaver? Why do these shows seem like ancient memories today? That's the question. What happened?
Because the ideal of a dad in those times, people saw a need to modify it. I mean, they started shedding light more on dads staying at home and taking care of the kids while mom worked and, you know, all kinds of stuff. I mean, and I'm just using that as an example. It just became a big shift as to what the prototypical dad is supposed to be. And now, you know, you have dads, you know, like you said, The Simpsons and Family Guy, you know. It's more important to hang out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good words. Anybody else?
Yeah, I think that those that are in control of the Hollywood landscape want to destroy the family instead of building it up. I don't think that the family values have changed that much opposed to the outlook and the way they want to spin it. I don't know of too many families like Married with Children, where in real worlds where dads are bumbling idiots, mm-hmm. but I think that the spin that's coming out of Hollywood is more in control of that than what's really happening in society.
Mm, good words, good words. Mm. I want to play something else for y'all real quick, and this is going to take you back, but see if you recognize this.
If not, why bother, son? A boy can make a but a man can raise one. If you did it, admit it's a sick way. Don't say it ain't yours. Because all women are not poor.
Now, does anybody remember that? Does anybody recognize that song?
I remember it. I just can't remember who made it.
Is that Father MC?
No, it's actually Ed OG and the Bulldogs, Be a Father to a Child. Yeah, that's old school. But, you know, why I play that, fellas, is, you know, we just talked about TV shows and movies, but what about music? How does our music today portray fathers? What about our music today?
It doesn't portray fathers. I mean, pretty much music today, father, in those terms that you just played that song, is a dinosaur. I mean, music today portray fathers as nothing. I mean, it's like he doesn't exist. It's only single parents. It's, you know, you listen to music, it's only single parent homes. You know, you listen to some lyrics, you know, Lil Wayne lyrics, you know, my dad is dead and all this other crazy stuff. You know, it's, you know, dad just ain't in it. He ain't in it, you know. Or he beat him or something, cheated on mom or something. It's always a flaw or something. No one knows my dad was a good dude.
Yeah, music today is pretty much fatherless, like you said. And not even the lyrics itself, but, you know, what's being portrayed in the songs, how women are being carried in those songs, as if there's no man in any house.
Mm.
Period. Because it's just a lot of disrespect going on. You know what I mean? Like I said, fatherless music.
Yeah, because, I mean, you got casual fathers and baby mamas. I mean, that's pretty much what it is. Everybody's out for themselves.
Yeah.
And, unfortunately, life lessons are only learned, you know, the hard way. But, you know, I want to touch on something that, you know, Andrew said earlier. And, you know, the media landscape points toward what might be sort of a national father complex. I mean, this combination of a growing anxiety about lost, absent, failed fathers and fathers' own struggle with the redefinition of their role after women's liberation, artificial insemination, and custody battles. Statistics about fatherlessness in America are questionable. However, it's a reasonable assumption that the U.S. is at the high end of the world spectrum in the number of single-parent household, as the brother just mentioned, and that single parent is overwhelmingly female. A high number of American children grow up without a father at home, and a vast majority of incarcerated men come from single mom household. So why do y'all think most single parent homes are overwhelmingly led by a female? Why is that the case? Why are most single-parent homes overwhelmingly led by a female?
because the men, you know, somehow for some reason have walked away from that that union. And sometimes it has nothing to do with the kids. They can love their kids with all eternity. However, because of that union between man and woman, they just couldn't handle it. So the best thing for them, the best option for them at that time was to walk away.
You know, I think that the downfall started with the welfare state. And in the early 60s, when the welfare situation started where it said if there's a man in a home, you don't get no money, you know, and you know, so it started paying women to have more babies, and it didn't hold the men responsible, and the men became less and less important, and, you know, it was like, well, you know, you got babies, you got money, and it devalued the man. You got the welfare and the child, you know, and the food stamps and this and that. The more babies you got, the more you get out of it. And like I said, if there was a man in the house, you weren't getting anything.
You know, I also think it's because it's easy for, you know, the old saying, mama's baby, papa's maybe. You know, and because the way women are wired as nurturers and everything to their child, they have that maternal instinct, they are just more apt to be dedicated to raising the child.
So, in general, is the perception that dads are the default parents, the one who's on call for times when mommy has something else to do? You know, you talk about nurturing. Is that how it's, you know, the perception is that dads are the default parents, you know, the one who's, you know, when mommy is busy, it's like, all right, there's your daddy at that time. But do y'all think are there a lot of stereotypes and preconceived notions about what it means to be a dad?
You know, I think a lot of young boys that are raised in these, you know, fatherless homes, they don't know. I mean, how can they know what it means to be a dad? You got babies having babies, you know, they're grandparents when they turn 24.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, you know, there's not a daddy in sight, and you hear, you know, these women say things like, well, you know what, I'm going to make my son a man. Ain't no woman on the planet can make her son a man. Okay, she doesn't know what it means to be a man. And she can try, and they can do the best they can, but, you know, it takes a man to teach a man to be a man. There's no woman on the planet can teach a man how to be a man, you know, because they don't think like men. And, you know, not to say that, you know, they can't do a good job when the situation is there, but the best case scenario is for a father to teach his son how to be a man.
Mm-hmm. Good words. And do you believe there's a difference to being a dad versus being a father, or are those two terms interchangeable?
Anybody can lay down and donate seed.
So anybody, are the two terms dad and father, are those interchangeable, or what do y'all think about that?
No, I don't think they are interchangeable. You know, anybody can be, you know, a donor, you know, but, you know, just like anyone to step up can be, you know, a father, you know, or a dad or whatever. Because I tell you the truth, Rodney, I'm not hip, so I don't know what's the difference between a dad and a father when you ask which one is the one that's the donor, basically, because I'm not following that one.
Yeah, and guest two said, you know, could it be that the core values of the family structure aren't as celebrated as they should be? And, you know, I think that it goes back to, you know, what you guys were saying is that, you know, anybody can lay down, but it takes, you know, it takes something different, you know, to actually be a father. But do y'all think that this crisis of fatherhood is just a sign of the times?
Mm-hmm. No, I think it's really a crisis. I think we wouldn't be having a lot of the issues that we're having right now in society if we had more, you know, I was going to say it, more James Evans out there.
Right. So this is not a new phenomenon, or is it? Is it a relatively new phenomenon, or what's
no.
new is how deep it cuts today?
I think it's been pretty steady.
I think it's worse today than it was when I grew up.
I definitely agree. I mean, I don't see it getting any better.
Let me not use the word steady. I mean, let me just use the word consistent.
When I grew up in the 60s and 70s, it was the odd situation to see a single mom.
Yes. Yeah.
It could be, you know, I didn't grow up in the inner city. I grew up in the suburbs. And you know, where I grew up, I mean, I only knew one or two kids. It was just mom raising them, you know, so it wasn't that kind of way. Now, obviously, you know, where I live now, it's usually two-parent families. But, there's a lot of folks out there now that, you know, it's just mama.
Yeah, that was different for me living in the city because my three best friends were raised by their mom. No dad around. And I've never to this day met either one of their parents, fathers. You know,
wow.
So a lot of that was going on, you know, even back when I was a young kid growing up, you know, dealing with the parent, my father.
Count.
Huh?
You're only 22 years old, so that don't count.
Yeah, I was sharing my father, you know, my pops. When he was around, you know what I mean? I mean, he was there my whole life, but when he was available, you know, then I had to share my father with, you know, the other boys in the neighborhood. Like, you know, my dad would come out and play with us because they didn't have a father. So, but we did have men in the neighborhood that would step up and fill a temporary void, which was good.
So what do you think, location? Because I know I grew up in Mississippi, and it was almost like a scarlet letter for you not to have, you know, just a single mom, you know, and that's me growing, you know, I was born in 75. So, you know, in the early 80s, late 80s and early, you know, it was known, you know, it was just like you single mom. It's just like, wow, it's just very rare, you know, and now it's, you know, it's normal. It's rare to see, you know, husband and father. I mean, woman and, you know, wife and husband together.
For sure, for sure. Yeah. I mean, it might be. I grew up right in New York City, Manhattan. And, again, that was, to me, the same way it is now with, you know, a lot of fatherless homes.
Yes, sir. It really has to do with the location you're growing up. You know, I mean, inner city, I think, has been that way for obviously a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
And now that's, you know, spilling over into many other areas.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So is it safe to say that men who skip out on their parental responsibilities are basically selfish?
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Well,
for sure.
The statement that you said, it has to be selfish if they skipped out.
Mm. They skipped out. Yeah, because you don't have to be. Go ahead.
No other way to put that. You skipped out. You're selfish. Now, there's other reasons that fathers may not be in the picture. I mean, he may be in jail. He may be, whatever. But that doesn't mean he skipped out. But if he skipped out, he's selfish.
I think that skipping out is a symptom of the disease, and the disease being not even knowing what a father really is,
right.
Because it dang sure ain't on TV.
That's right.
It ain't in the hip hop. It ain't in the lyrics. It ain't on TV. It ain't in your day to day dealing with your boys because they done skipped out. So you gonna be the rare one to stay, really?
So what percentage of men do y'all think are disengaged dads?
When you say disengaged, because you know you can have disengaged dads living in the house.
Wow.
You may not have gotten to that point yet, but, you know, you can have disengaged dads that rather play PlayStation than go to a softball game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, are you talking about those dads or the dads that are just not in the picture at all?
Let's just focus on the dads that are not in the picture for the moment.
Oh, okay.
What percentage of dads are not in the picture?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I would say, man, probably about, I don't know, 45%.
Wow. I mean,
yeah,
wow.
US-wide, I mean, I'm just saying, real talk. I mean, because this thing done spread from the inner cities to, you know, it's all over the country, wherever you go. It's a single dad everywhere.
Well, one of the things that I wanted to add is just because dad is in the picture, isn't in the picture, doesn't mean that stepdad isn't.
True.
Because, you know, we look at, you know, divorce rate or whatever, you know, 50%. But that doesn't mean there isn't a father in the home.
Right.
Are we speaking, you know, biological father?
We're just speaking biological.
Yeah.
What you talking about, Rodney?
Let's speak biological.
Yeah, biological, yeah. Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let's focus on that.
I stick by my number, 45%.
Yeah.
40, maybe 50% are not raising their kids on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
And I actually don't have, you know, I don't have the number on what percentage of men fall into this category.
Just like you had a food when you promised free food.
You don't have a number? Randy Turner doesn't have a number?
I have numbers, but they're just all over the place, and I didn't want to give you all false information.
He set that up like he had the numbers, didn't he?
I did.
There's a number.
Guess 2 has a number. It says, according to the Census Bureau, 24 million children in America, 1 out of 3, live in biological father absent homes.
That's 33%.
Mm-hmm. So,
and that's only by the census, because you know everybody don't talk to the census.
That's right. So y'all were probably right with the 40 to 45, 50% range, which is, you know, mm-hmm. unfortunate. But, you know, what could be some of the underlying reasons why so many dads are disengaged? What do you think?
There's no education, don't know how, doing what the Romans do. And, you know, the media. I mean, the media is downplaying it, and that's my reason.
I really that the bottom line is when, you know, when we started pulling values out of teaching, school and everything else, I mean, you pull God out of everything. And, you know, now you're teaching the kids, well, you know what, you nothing, you know, you used to be an ape, so you got no value. I mean, life has been devalued so much that, I mean, a child, you know, if you don't care about yourself, how are you going to care about a child? You know, we live in a society where I grew up, you know, if a girl got pregnant in school, I mean, she was shunned. I mean, she was like, you know, it was like, you know, it was a shame. They would hide it, oh, my goodness, and sneak off and, you know, disappear for a while. You know what I mean? They'd take them out of the school. They got in-home, you know, teaching and tutoring. Now it's like a badge of honor.
Yes, you're right.
When sin becomes a badge of honor, it's like, yeah, you know, I'm 15. I got 3 kids, you know.
That's bad.
Just turned 21, had a third child, started at about 15. I'm sitting here going, wow. No daddy in sight.
But why not? Why
you know,
no daddy in sight?
That's
where I'm lost.
Yeah,
I'm lost at the fact that, you know, somebody got her pregnant.
Yeah, and her daddy's incarcerated. You know what I'm saying? And I mean, it's just, it's a cycle that I believe starts with taking the values out of the teaching.
Yeah, but maybe something that, you know, happened in his relationship with his parents that made him reluctant to.
Oh, this is, we're already into the second generation of it.
Yeah.
Okay, you know what I mean? I mean, back in the 60s is when all these changes started to happen, and we're seeing the fruit of it right now. Okay, when the values stop being taught of you shouldn't do this and you shouldn't do that, where anything goes, you know, I mean, the fruit of that is what we have now. Okay, you know, so what are they teaching kids today in school? Well, you know, we know you're going to do it, so here's some condoms. Okay, when you get pregnant, you don't have to tell your parents. Come here, we'll get it taken care of for you.
I hear you, but what does that have to do with fathers not owning up?
Well, when you have those kind of situations and you have babies having babies and there's no daddy in their life and then they have a kid and they've never seen a daddy, it perpetuates the situation.
I got you, but there's a lot of not babies. There's a lot of grown folks having babies.
Yeah,
there's no daddy in the picture as well.
And you know, where we devalue the father to the point, I mean, you know, and I don't watch a whole lot of TV now, and case in point, there's nothing worth watching on it to me, okay? You know, I mean, you can't find a show like The Cosbys where you have a successful mother, successful father, and a father being honored. Okay, I remember that show, Married with Children. I mean, it would make me sick to look at that nonsense. And it was another little cartoon. What was the name of that?
Well, let me ask you a question.
Remember that first cartoon that they came out with on Fox?
Which show was more realistic, The Cosbys or Good Times?
I grew up in the Cosby household.
Yeah. Anybody want to answer that one? I'm just curious.
Say it again.
I'm telling you, I grew
what
up
was in that the question.
Which show was more realistic from The Cosby?
It all depends on your paradigm.
Or Good Times?
It depends on your paradigm. If you grew up in the ghetto, then it would be Good Times.
Okay.
If you grew up with professional parents, it'd be The Cosbys.
Yeah. I mean, I have to agree with that. I mean, I grew up with professional parents. So it was a mixture in between. I don't think it was all Cosby's because they want doctors, you know, they want lawyers and stuff. I mean, but they
I mean, that's not a reality for regardless of what race you talk about. So I mean, but in,
I mean, it can be, but I mean, it is today reality. I mean, you do have doctors.
Yeah. I mean, granted, it's a reality that there's a lot of homes out there that you know, especially amongst the Caucasian race that have a two parent household. But I'm just saying, you don't see in any race, for the most part, a doctor and a lawyer. That's just not as common. But, you know,
it's
as far as a
two-parent
household with two successful parents in general, I think that's still that the Cosby is still more the norm.
In my opinion,
I know that's what I saw. Both my parents are military, so I consider that, you know, them to be professional, successful workers. So that was my norm.
That's what I was talking about, more of the discipline, because, like, my dad was military. And it was more of the James Evans, you better do it, it's my way, or it wasn't more of the Bill Cosby, I'm gonna let you work your way through it. It was, I'm gonna put this belt on your hind paws if you act up.
So you talk about discipline. You talk about discipline, P-Town. And can a dad be disengaged when it comes to discipline? Now, I mean, you made a comparison between the James Evans and the Bill Cosby.
Yeah.
And it made it, you know, one of them was actually engaged. You know, James did go grab the belt, but Bill, you know, had a different way of discipline, you know, for his children.
Time out.
Yeah. Or he would let them figure it out. But, you know, what about, is it possible for a dad to be disengaged, you know, just when it comes to where mama does the discipline?
Well, I believe mama always did the discipline. I think nobody wanted that conversation where, because I remember the conversation when I got in trouble in school, I said, you can call my mama, please don't call my dad. Because that's a different type of discipline. I mean, I'll just be honest. I mean, mama's always did more majority of the discipline. Daddy stepped in when you overstepped your boundaries with mom. At least that's how it was in my household. And then, and when that happened, that's it. There's no talking.
In my household, you know, mama would get me first, and then daddy would, you know, back clean up.
Yeah. And it ain't no talking when he come in.
Yeah,
you know,
ain't no stories, and, you know, it's just...
At least your mama would talk to you and try to explain why it was going on. But...
Right.
No, I think it's totally and completely unhealthy if the mother is the only disciplinarian. It's okay.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it can be okay if the mother, you know, is the, you know, is the primary disciplinarian. As long as they have the fear of God in their father, that's cool. You know, that's healthy.
That's cool.
You know, the child's got to know that, you know, the father, as Rodney said, is there to back cleanup. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it is totally unhealthy if the mother's the only one doing the discipline. I think you got the, you know, you're setting the course for a child that's going to have disciplinarian problems, you know, throughout life. Because, I mean, they have no, you know, they won't have any type of common respect for men and probably for people in general, you know, as they grow older, if they don't have that father there, you know, to reinforce. So, because eventually, I mean, nature takes its course. Eventually, you're only going to take your mother, but so seriously when you get older and you're weighing 100 pounds more than her. There's only so much physically she can do. And, you know, and mentally, like I said, you know, hearing from a woman or being scolded by a woman is not going to be the same as being scolded by a man as you get older. So that father, the father absolutely has to play a critical, if not primary, role in discipline, being a disciplinarian.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one thing that has changed. And I don't know if anybody on this call is old enough to have experienced this, but I've heard stories about when a teenager or a child would cut up in the street and the neighbor was allowed to whoop them. And when they got home, they got another whooping.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
You know what
I'm
saying?
That happened to me all the time.
Yeah, see, so that right there lets you know that, you know, wherever you at, you're going to get it. But
I'm a fan. I want them to bring back corporal punishment in schools.
Well, guess what? Nowadays, the neighbors don't. They see you acting up in the street, they go back in the house because they're afraid you might shoot them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let me tell y'all a quick story real quick.
Let me tell y'all what I'm going through real quick. My 8-year-old daughter got, you know, the principal called from her school and said, we have a documented case of bullying. Okay, if it happens again, we're going to have to notify the authorities and all this other crazy stuff and get school officials involved. But let me tell you what happened. This girl who bullies everyone in the classroom, everyone in the class decides, you know what, we're sick of her bullying us, so we're going to stand up and we're going to say something to her. So they said something to her, and she filed. She told her parents that the entire class was bullying her, and her parents beat everyone else to the punch and got paperwork on every student in her class.
What?
Wow.
This is the society we live in. And you talk about a stranger putting their hands on a kid?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When the kids don't even want kids, it's going to be to the point where it's going to be lawsuits if your child say something crazy to another kid, if we don't watch it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you had parents out there that abuse their children to the point that mess it up for everybody else. I mean, you know, a spanking is a spanking, but when you beat your kids up sitting in school with black eyes, you know what I mean? That's what's going to get the authorities and, you know, involved saying, no, you can't beat on your kids no more. And it was just a few bad apples that messed it up for everybody, so now the system is whack.
The system is hypersensitive.
It is.
When they took the switch away, that was it.
We all went to school with bullies, okay?
Yeah.
Hey, it's just, you know, we're making these weak willy kids that, you know, all my feelings are hurt and I'm going to do this and do that. You know, and sooner or later a bully gets his because somebody gets tired of taking and punches into his doggone nose. Okay, because
mm-hmm.
a bully ain't looking for a fight.
No.
He's just looking for somebody he can punk.
He's just as scared as everybody else.
Yep. Go ahead.
What about discipline when it comes to being a stepdad? You know, is it easy to become a disengaged stepdad, you know, especially regarding discipline?
It is if you don't get things straight up front.
Mm.
You know, and if you walk into the situation like, okay, that's your child, it is. But, you know, when I got married, my daughter was 13. And that's a fun age to step in.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, from the beginning, you know, it was, you know, I let her know, look, you know, I might be your stepdad, but I'm going to raise you as my child. You're my child, okay? And I've never called her my stepchild because she's my child. And you know, I will fight and die for that child. But first of all, before you can discipline a child has to know that you love them. Because discipline really comes from the word disciple, which means to teach. And there's different ways to teach. It's not always, you know, taking out the belt. You're trying to get a, you know, you're trying to teach them, you know, how they can put their wings out and fly on their own.
Yeah, and I want to, good words, brother. I want to switch gears just a moment and talk about Trayvon Martin. Now, unless you've been living under a rock for the past few months, you've all heard much about it. But I don't want to talk about the racial or political aspects tonight. I want to talk about an angle that you may not have heard about. Trayvon's parents were divorced in 1999. Trayvon lived with his mom, but actually he was killed while visiting his father and his fiance. His mother is a Miami-Dade government employee, and his dad is a truck driver. Though they were divorced, they lived near each other in Miami Gardens, and they tried to make sure Trayvon was exposed to experiences beyond South Florida, which included skiing, snowboarding, and riding snowmobiles. Trayvon and his mother actually went horseback riding for her birthday one time. But on March the 21st, 2012, Washington Post columnist Courtland Malloy wrote a column. The column was essentially about how it was Trayvon's mother, not his father, that spent nearly a month pleading for George Zimmerman's arrest. It was Trayvon's mother whose call was eventually heard. Mr. Malloy also mentioned another separate story in his column, in which another boy's mother brought widespread attention to an incident that happened at his school. And I want y'all to listen to this clip. It's only about 10 seconds. Just listen to this clip.
Tell the country, are you determined to hang in there no matter what till this is over?
Till the day I die. I'm a mother, and I want justice for my son, and I won't stop until I receive that.
That was Trayvon's mother from an interview on March, and back in March. Mr. Malloy writes, in so many instances, it is the mother who leads the most desperate fights to protect their sons. Mothers cry the longest at their slain sons' funerals, and mothers cheer the loudest when their sons march across the stage in caps and gowns. Now, this is not to say that Trayvon's father was not involved in his life. Again, Trayvon was visiting his father when he was killed. So I want to pause right there. What do y'all think about this column that Mr. Malloy wrote? What do you think about it? Where it was Trayvon's mother who was, you know, her call was the one that was heard. She was the one who was out, I need justice for my son. What do y'all think about this column?
I think it's a bunch of bull.
I think it is, too. I think just because she was outspoken doesn't mean that he didn't feel the same thing. And if Trayvon's father had an opportunity to go handle it himself, I guarantee you he would have handled it himself.
Every time I've seen them, they've been together. And that's the amazing part. So what you're really seeing is four people. Because remember, the father, I don't know if the mother has anybody else, but the father has a fiance.
Right.
He's with his, you know, I hate to say it, baby mama,
right,
traveling the nation trying to get justice for their child.
That's right. And you got to applaud the fiance for staying in her lane. You know,
exactly.
Not
everybody's on the same
TV.
On that side.
So everybody on the same page, man. And you're right about one thing. You know, if he could have got his hands on that man hearing his son going down that street, you know, why wasn't he there? Why couldn't he hear him? It would have been a different situation going on.
Yeah,
right now.
Yeah. You don't know what that man. We all know. We know.
We all know.
We know how that man felt listening to that 911 tape with his son crying and his son stopped crying, and there's nothing he could do because he couldn't even be there to help his son. We all know.
But then there's a stereotype of all black men. I mean, let's just be honest. I mean, there's the black angry man. So if he shows his anger and he doesn't show that they're on the same page, then that same columnist will be writing a different article.
That man is trying to be strong for Trayvon's mom, his fiance, Trayvon's aunts, everybody involved. He's trying to be a pillar of strength. And that's the role that he's taking.
That's right.
P-Tam mentioned that it was, you know, he would be writing another article. And several days later, Mr. Malloy actually wrote another column apologizing for the first one. He noted that the implication was that the lower profile of the fathers, by comparison, meant that they were somehow less involved. Now, Trayvon's father did not seek an apology for the column, but the readers prompted Mr. Malloy to apologize. One reader commented that the entire column was bizarre and unnecessary to write.
For sure.
So,
for sure.
You know, they were like, you need to apologize. But in Mr. Malloy's apology, he writes this, and I quote, "Whenever I attend a wake or a funeral or sit in on a murder trial, I look for the fathers. Many times the person I see holding the family together is the grandmother," end quote. So what do y'all think about that? Is Mr. Malloy right in that respect?
No, because we on the phone.
We on the phone, for sure. There's not one grandmother on this line.
So, yeah, it ain't my, you know, my mom ain't down there, married men don't talk, so I don't know what the hell you talking about.
That's good words. You're exactly right, fellas. That's good. And I want to finish this segment. I want to play Trayvon's father, what he said.
Trayvon was my hero. He saved my life. At 9 years old, Trayvon pulled me out of a burning fire, went back in the house, retrieved the cell phone, and called 911. If it hadn't been...
Your house was on fire?
Yes. If it hadn't been for 911, for Trayvon at 9 years old calling 911, I wouldn't be here today.
Now, I never knew this. So your house was on fire, you were trapped in, and Trayvon called 911 at 9 years old?
Trayvon pulled me out of the kitchen, out of the burning kitchen, went back in the house, retrieved the phone, came back out, called 911. I will not stop fighting for justice for Trayvon until I die. He gave his life. He almost gave his life for me. I won't stop until I get justice for him.
And ironically, the video clips that I just played of Trayvon's parents were from an interview that aired on March the 21st. The same day Mr. Malloy's first column was published. I thought that was interesting. So on TV, here are the parents, and this is something that Mr. Malloy had written, of course, prior to this interview being shown on national television and was submitted and published. But both of these, you know, literally, you could be reading his column, and in the background, the TV interview is playing on the same day. So, with that, moving on. Last month, we talked about penguins with the topic March of the Penguins. But tonight, I want to talk a few minutes about elephants. That's right, elephants. When elephant babies are young, they're inseparable from their mothers and an extended circle of aunts and cousins that make up the matriarchal community. It would be unlikely that a young elephant would even have met his father, as the adult elephants roam free or convene in small bachelor herds, only approaching the female herds when it's time to get down. Adult elephants do have a hand in parenting, but their role happens later when young teenage elephants need discipline and guidance. Adolescent elephants break away from the matriarchy in their mid to late teens. Sometimes they go off adventure-seeking on their own, and other times the mothers give them a little push towards independence. The young elephants who have never been left unattended by governing females begin to find their way in the world, but they still need guidance. Elephants between the ages of 18 and 30 are flooded with testosterone. They naturally become more aggressive during these periods, but don't yet know how to temper themselves. Unchecked, they become extremely dangerous and will rampage anyone and anything in the vicinity. There have been problems in African game parks where teenage delinquent elephants have started killing off endangered white rhinos for no reason at all, just a savage expression of power and dominance over the weaker animal. In size and brute strength, fellas, elephants are actually the real kings of the jungle. And this is where the older elephants become mentors. The only thing stronger than a teenage elephant is an older male elephant. The young ones quickly learn to back down in the presence of the elders. Instead of being cocky and violent, they humbly calm down and act respectful in the male herds. In short, they learn to temper their natural aggression and use it more appropriately. Now, it's unknown whether the young elephants find their biological fathers or find their male bonding group by accident, but the social structure is undeniable. Teenage male elephants need their fathers to socialize them. So here's the question. Are young elephants a lot like us humans? I mean, in the way that we need powerful and present fathers to mentor our children, set respectable boundaries, and to demonstrate the wise use of power. Are young elephants a lot like us?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, no, maybe so.
Self-explanatory. There's nothing that can be said about that. That's very self-explanatory.
Mm-hmm. But why do y'all think some human dads feel that it's not their job, like these elephants, you know, to take an interest in the kids? Why do you think men, you know, duck out on this extremely important responsibility as fathers?
Instinct. You got instinct versus reason. You know, humans are taught to reason, and you know, as the gentleman was stating earlier, you're going to do what you have seen. With animals, you know, animals don't reason. They act off of their instincts. So, you know, naturally, elephants, you know, have been, you know, they have been bred essentially to, you know, their instincts tell them, hey, this particular animal is bigger than me. I'm going to go and, you know, I'm going to back down. I'm going to show respect. For a lot of men, that's not what they've seen. You know, I mean, that's they haven't, you know, been taught. You know, as I said, human beings are taught in reason. You know, so it's not a, you know, it's not a part of their psyche to mentor or to teach or to discipline. So it's simple. It's instinct versus reasoning.
Mm-hmm. And you talk about, you know, roaming around and being violent and you know, aren't fathers supposed to be the ones most responsible to maintain law and order in the neighborhood? I mean, last week, P-Town, I think you were talking about something that happened in your neighborhood, you know, where, you know, young men were riding through your neighborhood looking for garage doors that were
up. Yeah. These teenage boys were just riding through the neighborhood, and then they saw a garage open. And they went. The people were home, and they went running there and stole stuff right out of their garage. I mean, no respect. I mean, that was just real bold to do it while the people were at home.
So is that our responsibility to maintain law and order in our neighborhood?
I mean, yeah. You're not going to send your wife out to deal with that. I wouldn't think. Something
right.
Happens in the middle of the night, you're going to wake your wife up and tell her, go see what it is?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it starts at home. And then from home to the neighborhood, you know, in your own house, you got to be the man of the house. You got to make sure that, you know, everything's secure. You can't send your wife out there.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is, if there's no man in the house, then who's going to do it?
There you go. And it's funny that you said that, T-Hawk. Thank you for that, because I've got a short clip, another clip. It's 30 seconds, and listen to this.
But if we're honest with ourselves, we'll admit that too many fathers are also missing. Too many fathers are MIA. Too many fathers are AWOL. Missing from too many lives and too many homes. They've abandoned their responsibilities. They're acting like boys instead of men.
Now, that was then-Senator, now President Obama, back when he was giving a Father's Day speech on June the 15th, 2008. Was he right?
Yeah, he's right.
He's right.
And he's right, and let's just be honest. There's multiple reasons why men aren't in a home. I mean, I don't know if you're going to talk about it, but, I mean, there's the first situation with the man and the woman not being alone together. There's the second situation is that he wants to be a pharmacist and end up going to jail. And the third one is that sometimes, even though the man and woman don't live together, he tries to be part of the family, but the woman puts that wall up. She does anything to destroy his relationship with his kids.
So you're saying that's actually one of the answers that I was going to give. The relationship with the mother may prevent him from being a father.
Right.
Pretty much. Gotcha.
Yeah.
So if he doesn't get along with the mother for whatever reason, it's going to prevent him from his fatherly duty.
Right. Because every time he tries to do something for the kids, she's going to make it seem like it's not enough, or he doesn't deserve the kids. I know some folks that's going through that right now. I mean, every time he goes to see the kids, she's calling the cops on him.
Yeah, because nowadays women are encouraged, you know, to be a single mom. You know, dude is no good, and they don't know what a, you know, the women grow up in homes without fathers, too, so they don't know what a father, they don't know how a connection is.
Yeah, but they lay down with this same dude. Come on now.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Now, we just listened to a little clip from both Obama, President Obama, and what was that? You read the article on Trayvon with the guys. Now, don't they both go hand-in-hand, like with the article that the guy wrote, we said no, that's not true.
Uh-oh.
But with Obama, you know, when he made the statement, we say, oh, yeah, it's true.
Uh-oh.
I think it was two different things, though. I think I think
they go hand-in-hand.
Okay, but I think Rodney's question was something in reference to women being more outspoken in situations of, you know, family stress than men. And I think Obama was just talking about the lack of men, the lack of the men's presence, period, in the family. And if somebody earlier said 45%, that's a big number. So there is some truth to both statements. I mean, I could be wrong.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
I think they go hand in hand, like you said, it's true from both statements. But I mean, I think when we hear the article, you know, the way that it's written, you know, we instantly take offense to it because I don't know. My guess is that the writer was white, and you know, a lot of us be like, you know, we take offense. That's a very sensitive topic for a lot of people, and then with Obama. You know, we can do it, and he's like one of our own. He's, you know, he said, you know, yeah, he's right. You know, you can kind of, you know, side with him a little more.
Dude, you're 100% correct. We should take more offense to that.
Right.
We should take more, especially the ones that are handling their business and being the head of households. We should take more offense to that. Obama said.
Yeah. And for the record, Mr. Malloy is black. kind of, you know, felt like you did, brother. I actually didn't think he needed to apologize, because there was some truth in what he was saying. It maybe was inappropriate. You know, I understand all of that, but, you know, I do appreciate the apology, but there was some truth in what he was saying.
But there's no way he can write that without knowing Trayvon's father on a personal level.
It was just inappropriate
right now.
Yeah. I agree.
Exactly.
What Obama said,
it's a very sensitive topic.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. What Obama said was appropriate. And when Bill Cosby spoke on it and got highly criticized, that was appropriate as well. Because it needed to be said. Because you got a lot of deadbeats running around here thinking that, you know, somebody else going to raise their kids for them.
I wish somebody would come over here.
That's good. That's good. Well, I want to go ahead.
I've been listening, and because typically I got some things going on before, so I... but I'm able to talk on it now. But I've been listening, and so a question that I have is society as a whole too sensitive nowadays, where everything is offensive, everything, the whole bullying topic, I heard someone mention that earlier, you know, everything's just becoming a little too out of control, right? Gays got to have all these different rights, and I'm not, if somebody's on the phone is gay and, you know, you're part of this conversation, I'm not trying to offend you, but it would prove out my point. But,
that's right. Make sure you're politically correct.
Yeah, absolutely, right? But I think everybody's being too sensitive, including the black man as the baby daddy, that you run out so quickly because you have baby mama drama. Instead of hanging in there and fighting for that kid and being persistent and determined that you're not going to get out of that kid's life. You're going to go through the courses. You do it right. I'm not saying you're going to hold a gun to your head, but you're going to do it right. You go through the courses, and you do whatever you got to do. You pay lawyer for years on end if you have to, because that's your child. That's your seed.
That's
and,
right.
You know, are we too sensitive? We run out, or she didn't did this. Forget that. I ain't got time. But I got me another girl. She got some kids, so I'm going to raise them. Or we can have some more kids together, and you don't spend that. You know what I mean? Do we make too many excuses? Is society as a whole too sensitive?
Mm. Yes. I agree 100%. Society is incredibly sensitive and is getting more sensitive. They don't want to teach kids the difference between winning and losing. Everybody's winners. And when they get out here in real life, they don't even know what to expect. Yeah, I agree, man. Everything is sensitive, man.
And when you see Bill Cosby, or you see, or hear, I should say, hear Bill Cosby, or you hear an Obama, or you hear someone else attacking an issue that is absolutely evident, if not to Hispanics and whites, although it is to them as well, it is absolutely evident to the people who live in the black community, right, that we have a lot of deadbeat fathers, a lot of fathers that are not around, a lot of fathers who choose to take the easy way out, which, again, kind of equates to the sensitive nature of society, but we choose to do that, and then when someone says it, we got the nerve to get offended of it, when we know better than any other race what's going on within our own community.
I'm telling you, we as a society in general have let quote-unquote being politically correct and quote-unquote, you know, the liberties, I guess, that are supposed to be guaranteed to us by the Constitution affect our morality. It's all about, don't tell me what to do. No one should be able to tell me what to do. Or it's all about, you know, when you speak, or, you know, like you said, if you're talking about something that is totally evident, if you're not politically correct, you know, your point can get totally lost in, you know, in transition. So, you know, as much as I can't stand some of the, you know, the social radio commentators, you know what I mean, because of the lack of tact that they have at times, sometimes what they say is 100% correct.
Hey, I want to share a story if I could.
Go ahead, bro.
I had this coworker that came in my office, and he just started talking about, you know, he just had this child with this girl, and they're not getting along. and the baby was never allowed to see his parents. And then the mother of the child had her own visitation hours. She had her own program going on, and this guy had to, you know, listen to whatever she said. So anyway, make a long story short, they went to court for child support. He didn't have an attorney. He didn't know what to do. He was getting ready to sign the documents. He was probably signing all of his rights away and didn't know. Anyway, make a long story short, when he was telling me the story, I said, well, hold on a second. You can't go back into that courtroom without some counsel. So I gave him the number to a friend of mine that's a divorce attorney. I said, you got to call her. And I said, whatever she's going to charge you, it's in your best interest to pay it and have some representation the next time you go in, because you have rights as the father, especially the fact that you're trying to be in the child's life and you're trying to do the right thing. Okay. So, but in that one case, had he not gotten some sensible advice on how to handle the situation, he would have been another father that's trying to be a father that got pushed away by the mother. And I think that happens far too often, and we take the fathers and say, well, yeah, they're not trying, but the mothers, if they don't want to have anything to do with the father, 9 times out of 10, you know, we lose in court, if y'all don't know that. Men, if we don't have proper representation with child support, with divorce, or whatever the case may be, we, 9 times out of 10, we're at a disadvantage. So at some point, you know what I mean, the men do try, but it's got to be a situation where we have to step out and help and educate those that don't know how, that definitely want to be a father.
You know, that brings up something else I just want to say. It's not all the men's fault. Definitely, we know women are emotional creatures, and we know how a scorned woman can carry herself. And sometimes, a lot of times, women use these kids as a way to get back at the man.
Oh, for sure.
And that's the premise for what that brother just spoke about right there. I don't care about the welfare of my child. I just care about getting even.
Even.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So, go ahead.
It's sad but true.
Yeah, I mean, we know the elements there. We also know that they're the weaker vessel. We also know that we, you know, that if we do know that it is our child. And we need to do everything within our means. So when we say we try, we got to put that ing on it. In other words, we got to continue to do that. We say we're trying, which means it's not, well, yeah, I tried to get him, and you know, the court shut me out, so I'm done. What? Really?
No. Yeah.
That's it. That's your big hoorah. That's your big, you know, attempt to try to get your son. You went to court one time or two times, and that's it. Now you out.
Yeah.
You know.
This is funny to me, because it sounds like y'all are talking about disengaged moms.
Mm.
You know, because, I mean, will women even admit to being disengaged, if only
so?
I don't think disengaged. I think there's some bitter women out there.
Look, you know, come on. We're all married, and some of us have been married before. Might be some people on here who want to get married and been in relationships, whatever the case is. Look, bottom line is, you're going to have a problem with women. At some point in time in your life, you're going to have, if you're in a relationship or, you know, have been, you've had some drama with your wife. It's with women, you're going to have an issue with it at some point in time or another. And if you hurt them, we know what the words say, right? That hell has no fury. So we get that. That's just there. That's plain. I don't think we need any Greek and Hebrew interpretations of how that works. That's there. The question isn't really or not whether they're going to get upset, whether they can be vindictive. I mean, I think the question is, what do you do with it? How should we handle it whenever that does happen? Because it's going to, right? It's not the question of, she does this or she did that, and, you know, now I can't, she don't let me see my child. Okay, we got all of that.
Yep.
That happens. One thing I don't think we have to talk about on. I'm going to say this call only because I'm going to pretend to know everybody that's on the call, that the majority of us are African American. So we don't have to hold any cut cards and pretend that we don't know baby mama drama going on within our community. Probably more so than other communities, but sure, it goes on in other communities as well, right? But so we're not going to pretend that doesn't happen. So. Since it does happen, since that is reality, the real question is, how do you deal with it? And well, do you continue to do it, or do you give up?
Well, like I said, and like you just said, you can't go to court one time, lose, and be like, that's done, because that's still your child. Going to be your child to the day you die. But you got to figure a way to fight evil with evil, or whatever you want to call it. But you have to get representation. You have to, you got to make it legal. If you in that lady's house and you raise your voice she's going to get legal representation, call the police, get you locked up. You ain't even got hit. All you got to do is raise your voice and she's going to get you locked up and say you're an unfit father. So at some point, you have to say, okay, well, now I'm going to get some protection. I'm going to hire me an attorney to represent me. So when now I go in here and I want to get my business, I want to get my half, I will be able to get it without any drama. But you can't just let them have their way.
Exactly, because it gets worse. It gets worse. I know a person right now that, he didn't pay attention because he usually goes pick up the kids from school. He went and picked up the kids from school, and his wife called and said, you know, this is your warning. If you do it again, you have a contempt. You got to stay away from me and the kids. I'm going to call the police on you.
Yeah, and it ain't even legal.
Instead of saying thank you because you were late picking up the kids, she would rather have the kids late and not be picked up by somebody and then to have their own dad who loves his kids pick the kids up. She'd rather have him in jail. And the only ones that get hurt are the kids, especially if you have boys. Because now you got boys thinking that this is how you're supposed to handle women.
But, you know, guys, you know, we got to be honest. Women don't just get that way because of nothing. All right? They've been dogged. They've been all kind of stuff. And usually that's a reaction.
Okay, okay. Here's a reaction. I had sex with you one night. You got pregnant. I don't really love you anyway. But I'm going to raise this kid.
Well, when she has sex with you, you're going to love her after sex.
You may say it during sex, but after sex, you'd be like, oops, you're pregnant. Okay, well, now we got an issue. Now I'm going to help raise this kid. You know, a lot of one-night stands happen that way. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. No, I was going to say, so, you know, I'll give a quick story, and I'll tell you how that's relevant. But when I moved here from up around Pittsburgh area, moved up here my last year in Maryland, that is, in my last year, actually my half my junior year, but moved here to Maryland, and you know it was a whole crazy environment at the school. I wasn't accustomed to it. Pittsburgh's a different type of culture than what I was experiencing here, and I ended up not being here only a few weeks before someone wanted to try you. That's and if anyone's ever moved from maybe different schools or whatever, different states and moved around or whatever. And maybe you've kind of experienced the same thing, but and somebody wanted to test me, and I know how my brothers are. I'm the youngest of seven, and I know what they've kind of told me through the years, and what you need to do if you ever get into that situation, you throw down, right? You throw down, you send a message. You might not win, but you're gonna throw a message and saying, look, I'm gonna at least go at you, so be prepared to catch a couple blows, even if I don't win. So. So, of course, that's what I did, threw down and everything. Didn't have any more problems from that point on. So how is that relevant to this particular topic and what we're talking about right now? That I think if you're in that situation where this woman is bullying you, because that's what's happening, and she's just using a child to try to bully you or to frustrate you to do something stupid anyway, so she can prove out her point that you're just an ignorant and dumb black kid or black man, whatever it is, But I'm not saying fight her physically. Obviously, that's not the way to go. But like I said earlier, you're fighting in court, or you're consistently, maybe going to the school, sending letters to the teachers or whatever, at least having some kind of communication, trying to be positive and try to still be there as that role model. If you continue if you put up a fight, but if you don't put up that fight, then she's going to continue to, as soon as you quit once, it's on. She's going to continually nail you to the wall. That doesn't mean after the first time you go to court that she said, oh, he's a fighter and I'm going to stop. But I guarantee you, if you keep fighting and you keep showing that you're not this animal,
that she's trying to make you out to be, and this deadbeat father that she's trying to make you out to be, she's going to be influenced not only by your actions, but she's going to be influenced by her own family or others, who, her friends even, who see you doing the right thing eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I know that to be true. I know that to be the case.
Yeah.
But if you don't fight, you can forget it. She's going to absolutely convince that kid this is who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? And that's what I told that guy. I said, she's going to look at you different. Her and her attorney is going to look at you different when you walk in that courtroom with power. It's going to be totally different.
Exactly right.
You see what I'm saying? Now they're going to know they can't bully you around. You got somebody that's in there, a seasoned veteran, that's actually a divorce attorney. And this is not even a divorce case. This is just a child custody case.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? When you walk in there with this person, you're going to get your respect that's needed, and you're going to get what you need. But you have to first start by fighting back, like just what Roddy's talking about.
Yeah, you have to have your receipt. If you're talking to the teachers about your child and, you know, how's everything going and this, that, and the other, and get recommendation letters from the teachers and say, no, he's on point. He's there. He's asking the questions. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I was just going to co-sign, and you have to document things.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, absolutely.
You got to document things, and that's why I was telling my friend that who's going through the exact same thing right now, that you can't give up, but you got to go at it a different way, because the way you're going at it, she has the power. You got to. It's almost like osmosis. You got to put the negativity back on her. And that's by showing power. You have to get the right lawyer. You have to have everything documented. Even when she calls you 1,000 times, document every single time that she calls, and put it back on her. Give it to your lawyer and say, see, it's not me. I'm trying to tell the court. The court already, once a man puts the black coat and the black coat has to make a decision for you, you're in trouble.
You're in trouble.
Because the laws are built for the women. They are.
Yeah, you're in trouble.
And the truth is, you are lazy, no good, deadbeat, what have you, long before you have a kid. You just using the kid now as an excuse, you know, or you using the baby mom, I should say, as an excuse, you know, to say why you're a deadbeat or why you're not involved. It's because of her. It's because of this. It's because of that. And you're just using that as an excuse. You've been a deadbeat in everything you did in your life. You've been lazy. And I know that's probably harsh. Everybody's saying, no, that's probably not the case because I've been accused of that and I'm a hard worker or whatever. But if you're a hard worker, then you working hard, right? And that's on a consistent basis. You're doing your job. And that's what really makes you a hard worker, not because you went in today. Because you go in all 7 days and you get that paycheck at the end of the day, that's what makes you a hard worker, not just because you showed up today.
Well, let me ask y'all this: does being divorced make it easier to be disengaged, especially if the ex-wife gets full custody?
Easier.
Everybody agree with that? Go ahead.
Well, y'all go ahead. I'm gonna say easier.
Does being divorced make it easier to be disengaged, especially if the ex-wife gets full custody? T-Hawk says easier. Do you agree or disagree with him?
I mean, I don't know too much about divorce. But, I would have to say it would be easier because the emotional issue is gone. It's more now of you end up coming. It takes time, but I've seen them when they become more friends that they can deal with each other now because they don't have that, I guess, that contract that's binding them together. She can go her way, he can go his, and there's no issues. It's just the kids, and you know. All I got to do is show up at the kids' events. I'm going to make sure that they, when it's my time, that I do what I do. And when they over there, they do what they do. And there's no conflict until, you know. And then even when it's time to make decisions, it's easier because the communication is better. I'm just assuming. You got to ask the divorce guys, whoever got divorced. I'm just assuming.
Give us an insight,
Tony.
The real world is y'all couldn't talk when you were married, and it gets worse when you get divorced.
Yeah.
That's the real world.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I mean, realistically, you go from everyday father to weekend father.
Every other weekend.
So that's disengaged right there. And then if she gets married and some other man steps in and who's a great dad to your kid, then that's even more. Then you're feeling like, well, I'm going to let him handle his business because whatever the case may be, he's already got a new family now. So that gives man another more of a reason to say, okay, well, y'all go ahead. I'm not going to interfere. But that, I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying that, you know, I'm just trying to answer the question.
Tony, I'm going to tell you the truth. I experienced that. Okay, because my stepdaughter's father was very engaged until I married Glenn. Glenn, he almost took his hands off. Once he realized, well, he's a good guy and he's got this, it was a vanishing father.
Wow.
And I don't know if he was intimidated or what the situation, but, I mean, that was the exact – he was like, okay, well, I know she's going to be all right, and I know Andrew's going to take care of business, and you know, I don't have to be engaged.
Hey, let me ask you a question, though. How does that make you feel that somebody is just taking their responsibilities and giving them to you, even though you accept it with all your heart? But how does that make you feel that somebody is taking their biological responsibilities and just giving it over to you? And you didn't even ask for it.
What it did for me was it hurt me because my daughter was hurt.
Yeah.
And where she was daddy's baby girl, she was now pushed to the back, and it really hurt her. And I was like, you know, dude, return the phone call. You know, where before, you know, it was daddy, she was daddy's baby girl. And it was like, I don't think it was an intentional thing. I really think that he looked and he didn't have a dad growing up. And he saw, you know, me engaging in ways that he never did, as far as relationally and being able to speak to her and different things. And I don't know, you know, I think he kind of in his mind said, well, you know, my job is to make sure she's going to be okay. I see she's okay, and I don't have to do certain things because he's got it. And I don't think it was a negative thing in his mind, although she felt that way and finally confronted him about a lot of things.
Wow.
Yeah, and how does you know, a dad being disengaged, how does that affect the kid's emotions?
They don't understand it, especially if he was engaged and then you come in the picture, you know, like Tony, I know, you know, you stepped in the same kind of situation.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if your daughter, you know, her dad was involved, but, you know, it confuses a child where she's like, well, why aren't you, you know, why aren't you the way you were?
Yeah.
I think it's more confusing to a child.
Mm. Yeah, with mine, she wanted the relationship more than he did.
Okay, and that's how it appeared to my stepdaughter, because, you know, I mean, to the point where, you know, she would call him, and literally minutes later, he would call her back. And, you know, it finally got to a point where, I mean, you know, she'd call him later on, and, I mean, a week go by, and we say, well, did he call? He hadn't called me. Wow. I mean, that... And she couldn't, I mean, it was a difficult hit for her.
Yeah.
You know, my stepdaughters are in a beautiful situation. You know, they have me, you know, and I must admit I'm a pretty cool step. And they also have their fathers who are very engaged in their lives. And, you know, we're all on the same page. And, you know, I know something like that is very rare. Hardly ever happens, but... It's happening and it's working. And, I mean, you need it because this day and age, man, it's crazy what these kids deal with in school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I'm going to – now, I do have the research, the answer to this question. Thank you very much. One study actually said that separation or divorce actually improves the father's role in his children's lives because he now has to formalize and schedule his relationship with his kids. So, in essence, P-Town was kind of right. You know, it actually improves, in some cases, you know, the father's role because they now have to, okay, this is my weekend. You know, we're going to go to the movies or, you know, spend time. Whereas before, when you were in the house, it's like, hey, you go play your video game.
Every other weekend, yeah. I see that happening here in my house.
Yeah, yeah, so. But I wanted to rewind just a tad. This is great, fellas. I just wanted to rewind back to the President Obama clip. I wanted to, y'all talking about political correctness. And but I want to ask a question, kind of sensitive question, but it needs to be asked. Being president of the United States, the leader of the free world, is it understandable for President Obama to be disengaged from his family sometimes?
Just because you're not there doesn't mean you have to be disengaged.
Yeah. I don't understand that question.
Yeah.
I mean, what I'm talking about is that the brother has
a lot
on his plate.
The conferences and this and that, and he's not there. But I don't mean, I don't think you know, you can be engaged even if you're not home.
Yeah. Technology now has made it way too simple to be engaged. Even if it's a text message or a video chat, you know.
Right.
It only takes 5 minutes, man, to call your kid up and be like, okay, did you do your homework? How you doing? I'm over here in Indiana, you know. Okay, I'll see you later. Click.
Exactly.
Engaged.
You don't have
to be, don't
have
to be that.
That
I mean, honestly,
I
grew up like as a military family, military child. My father would frequently be gone for, you know, a year at a time, 6 months at a time. My mother was gone 2 years at a time at once. They were still highly engaged, and this is before, you know, the technology boom and the internet, you know, if it was sending letters or, you know, if it was just, you know, communicating from, you know, because sometimes they would talk at work because it was free, just, you know, communicating how they felt, you know, through each other, you know, they were very, very much engaged, you know, I mean, aside from missing that physical presence, you know, I still felt, you know, just as much responsibility and, you know, being held accountable for my actions by my parents, you know, they weren't there because I was a military child.
Yeah, and I wasn't actually talking about the brother not being home. I was just talking about the fact that he has the weight of the world on his shoulders. And he has other things, unlike our jobs, who, you know, we get off at 5 or at 9, and it's like, you know, to be there tomorrow.
You're saying they're too busy to spank their behinds, huh?
No, I'm not saying that either. I'm just saying that, and y'all talk about technology, you know, with all of our modern, you know, technological advances, doesn't that make it easier to be disengaged, you know, because we got cable TV, we got Netflix, we got internet, we got smartphones.
I think, Ronnie, I think it has to do with your heart. And, it, you know, you can have all kind of things going on, but if you care about your children, you're going to pick up the phone and say, how was your day?
Mm-hmm.
What's going on? What's happening? And it has nothing to do with whether they're, you know, you text message, you pick up the phone, you get them on Skype, you sit down on the couch, whatever it happens to be. You know, and that's the bottom line. It doesn't stop when they turn 18, because believe me, all my kids are past that, and I give them the same calls. These are how things going.
Yeah.
And
right, and that works across the phone too.
Go ahead.
And as far as Obama's concerned, being a president, I mean, you know, it's like, yes, he could probably get a math professor at Yale or Harvard to come and tutor his daughter. But when she says, I need help with my math homework, then he's got to sit down and be a father. And that's probably the most normal thing he's going to do in his day-to-day. But that brings him back to reality. And sometimes you have to come back to reality when you're in a situation like that.
Yeah, I was going to say that no amount of responsibility that you can undertake excuses you from being a father. I don't care if you are the president of the free world or whatever you want to give him a nickname. I don't care if you call him the Pope. I don't care what name you want to give him or anyone for that matter. that responsibility, the family is first. That you the chief commanding officer of that family first before mm-hmm. you're the chief commander of anyone else's family.
Yeah, that's right. Words. And that,
well,
that's
I got one. I disagree. If you're the Pope and you got kids, there's a whole different set of issues.
That's good, Andrew. That's good. But that
goes back to that excuse, though, Rodney. You know,
right?
And that's where people, you know, say, "Well, my job is so difficult." You know, and I know that's an extreme to say the president, because there's only one of them doing that job. But
yeah,
you know, some people say, "Well, you know, I got this going on and I got that going. You don't understand the weight that's on my shoulder." That's all excuses. That's just baloney. I don't even want to hear none of that stuff.
Which
are telling me that it's because that's just an excuse, because this is your first responsibility, and if you can't do this and that, then that has to go.
But brother, don't we think it's? I know that I'm kind of jumping in the conversation kind of late. I've been listening for.
No, go ahead, brother. You good?
That don't you think it's kind of relative, because I'm hearing some of the brothers saying, well, to be engaged means you're going to call and check in, even though you might be out of state, out of the country. It doesn't take a whole lot to call in and check in your kids. For some kids, for some family, that's not engaging.
Like,
is your kid going to remember that dad called and checked to see if I did my homework, or he's going to remember that dad showed up to my performance or came and picked me up after school? So
I can answer that one.
Would you say that, depending on your responsibility and work responsibility, that, yes, you have your first obligation is to your family and your house, but you're working to maintain and care for your family? Would you say that engagement is relative depending on the position that you're in? And I'm not talking about position at work, but just in terms of your life and where you are as a parent and as a father.
I can answer that one. I can answer that one, because I'm living that right now. I own my own business, and I'm on travel every week. So I leave my home. I used to leave my home on Sunday nights, and that right there, the kids were – I could see the kids were having some issues with that, because they wanted to, you know, see me leave off Monday morning. Well, it was a situation when it came up Monday. My daughter was getting her award for honor roll, and she was getting another award at school, and it was at 7:45 in the morning. Well, you know, I played the joking game that, no, I'm not going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and you could see the disappointment on her face. But I would never miss one of her award ceremonies. So the point is that when she saw me there at 7:45, that changed her mind, because I put her in front of my work. But she knows, you know, how hard I work, and she knows that, you know, I'm doing this, and she wants, you know, but you have to tell them the reason why you're doing this. See, you have to kind of explain to kids, because kids don't understand. And even once you explain to them, they still may not understand thoroughly. But I still talk to them. She calls me at 2:22 every single day. If I don't get a call at 2:22 every single day, and the people at work know, I'm answering my phone. I don't care what's going on at 2:22 every single day, because that's the time that my daughter gets home. And I don't care if I'm in a meeting, like I was in a meeting the other day. And the funny thing was, it was a lady doing the exact same thing. Her son got home, and he didn't call. And the first thing I said is, I got my call. You need to handle your business.
I think
it is relative.
About it being relative, right. Being relevant or being relative is really knowing your kid, which in essence – is what that time is all about, you know.
Right.
Whether you're spending quality or quantity, knowing that child, knowing the ins and outs of that child, so that that child doesn't feel neglected, doesn't feel left out, doesn't feel disconnected, or what have you. That's, you know, that's your job, right? To know your child, you know. And I know it's getting a little later, so I think it's free for me to say this, is that you train up a child in the way they should go, right? And in the latter days of the depart, it doesn't mean Sunday school or Sunday service or Bible study to some degree. You know, it means what is the gift that's in that child? Nurture that gift. You know, find out what that child is about, who that child is going to become, and work towards that. You know, help them build towards that. It's like being on the job. You know, I know some of you guys are managers or owners of your own businesses.
You have to look at those employees that you have and give them goals according to their abilities, not necessarily what the next person can do or can't do. You have to give them goals that's going to structure them and career path them and put them in the best place that's suited for your business and what you need them to do. And I hate to kind of compare family to business, but it is what it is. And
hey,
with your family, you have to kind of do the same thing. You have to look at that child, and you have to, so you know that child. So, yes, it is relevant or relative to that upbringing of that child. You know that child. So if you being at work most of the time and you're only spending fractions of time because you're building this legacy or whatever you want to call it, then, you know, you got to know that child. Is that child feeling disconnected? Is it feeling neglected? Is it starting to hate you? You should know that, man. You gotta govern yourself accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I agree.
And that's great words, Rodney, because, you know, is it possible that we find new interests, you know, to take up more of our time as sort of an indirect way to take us away from our family? And what I mean by that is, like, when you're not working, you choose to do something else, you know, rather than spending that quality time with your kids. Does that make you disengage? I mean, you rather play golf, you rather wash your car, you rather hang out with your boys, go to the gym. I mean, whatever it is you do, you know, is it possible that we find, you know, new interests that take up more of our time, you know, just to pull us away from our family?
Well, I mean, it can go both ways because, one, you still have to show by sight responsibility. As a man, you know, you have a lot of things that you got to handle, and you got to be able to balance that out along with family time, you know, or you're going to be driving around in a dirty car with that smells every single day because you didn't wash your wife's car, or your grass is going to look terrible. There's some things on Saturday morning that everybody knew when we talked about the James Evans family and that you had to do Saturday morning, because if you did it at 7 a.m., you got up at 7 a.m. every Saturday morning, then you had to rest the afternoon after everything was done to have family time. So you still got to have structure. And what happens is these days is we don't have a lot of us young folks, maybe I'm not going to say all the older ones, may not have proper structure or time management to do everything. So you end up taking other times away because you didn't manage your time properly so that you can get everything done and still have that quality time with the kids and your wife.
I think the proper word is balance. You know, you got to have a balance in your life. And, you know, there's people, we talk to people that got three kids and their kid is in a different activity every season, and they got all kind of things, and they're literally, we met some folks this past week. We were out of town, and I mean, their life revolved around these three children, you know, and my wife and I looked at each other and said, look, you know, balance. You need a balance in your life. You know, some people go absolutely nuts, and they think their life is to cater to these children. It's not, you know, and whatever it happens to be, there's got to be a balance. There's got to be time for your children. There's got to be time for your marriage. There's going to be time for your job, your church, whatever is important to you. And when one thing gets out of whack, everything else suffers. I really think you need to have a good balance in your life because, you know, at some point, these children are going to be gone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's the goal. We're about to have our last child leave the house, okay? And my wife and I are putting things in place, and she's going to be leaving very, very shortly. You know, and if we hadn't had a balance, what would happen now? We'd look at each other like, who are you?
Yeah, and I want to speak to those, you know, new interests, you know, like the golf, you know, the hanging out with the boys, washing the car. Or, you know, but speaking of new interests, I want y'all to listen to this. It's only about 10 seconds.
Yeah, Jimmy Hollycourt, 55377. Hello, it's Daddy. Hey, darling, put Mommy on the phone.
Sunshine.
Yeah, Barbara, it's Richie. Yeah, look, I ain't ever coming home no more. Take it easy.
Sunshine.
Y'all remember? Yeah, Sunshine. Y'all know
from
Night.
Harlem Night.
Yeah, so y'all know it's time. You know, Rodney already, he went in another direction, but I wasn't ready for that yet. But how can an emotional or physical affair lead to a disengaged dad?
Always does. Throws everything out of balance.
Mm-hmm. How so?
Well, one thing, first of all, whenever you see somebody in an affair type situation, you only see them at their best. Okay? I mean, you don't see the crap. You don't see the nonsense of living with them and dealing with them. You see them at their best. So you get this distorted picture of this is how this person is. Okay? And affair, at its core is about taking from one and giving to another, and you're trying to give your best to this one that's on the side. And, it may start out as, one time, and then it starts into, two times and once a week, and then that's not enough, and then, she's very understanding, and then, hey, well, what do you mean I don't get to see you on holidays and weekends? At one point, it goes from an excitement to a bondage. Okay, and all the excitement gets out of there, and now you're trying to figure out how can I live two separate lives, and you can't do it.
Well, let me go a little deeper. Is it possible for a man to be disengaged while having sex with his wife? And what I mean by that, fellas, is that while getting it in, imagining how your coworker Tracy would be in the sack. Yes.
You said,
no.
Is it possible?
Yeah, is it possible?
Boy, you're getting wrong now.
Yeah, it's time. It's time. Oh, it's time.
Sure, it's possible. Is it right?
Listen, let me go a little deeper than that. What about, being disengaged while having sex with your wife, and you start to reminisce about that old flame of yours from back in the day that you could stick it in whatever hole you wanted to. And it didn't even matter the order of which hole you stuck it in.
Good grief. Rodney's going hard tonight.
Yeah, I mean, really.
You need to get off somebody's driveway.
Yeah, I'm in the lazy boy in your master bedroom right about now, flipping the channels, eating popcorn. Let me just go a little bit deeper. As a matter of fact, that old flame of yours, she would even tell you where you can put it. Listen.
My baby, let me.
Rodney, I'm about to start a party. Oh, my wife, tired of that song. She's like, yo, you cannot bump that while I'm in the car with you. This is my joint.
Wow. I mean, you said in your mother. Oh, shut your mouth. Shut your mouth.
That is my jam. My basement right now.
Yeah, listen, fella. Let me take it a little bit deeper than that. Now, listen. Yo, I hope you're sitting down. What about being disengaged while getting head from your wife? And let me help you. Let me paint the picture.
And what are you talking about?
Let me paint the picture. While you're getting head from your wife, are you reminiscing about that chick that used to swallow?
Oh.
No. No. Hold on. Don't nobody answer that question. That's foul, man.
That's taking it too far, man. You don't get over the line.
That's too far. That's taking it too far.
Nah, I'm not answering that. I'm not.
For this. All
right. Yeah.
Punishment.
Let's get back on topic, man.
Oh, man.
But.
Yeah, you messed me up. I'm about to.
So how come, pun intended, you didn't marry her? You know, that old flame you had. I mean, now that's an easy question. But I mean, why didn't you marry her?
Question.
Why didn't you marry her?
Come on.
Because she done did everybody else.
Exactly.
What did the song say?
She
went over to
the boy's
red house.
So you going to now kiss the bride with one that sing that song right there?
Oh, man,
Ronnie,
let me. Yeah.
She got to nurse your babies.
Oh, man, let me get back on topic. This is too much for y'all.
Yo, did you hear what I said?
No, what did you say? What did you say?
Oh, you said, why didn't you marry her? I said, that's because she said no. That's why.
That's good. Some of them get that tomorrow. But back to being disengaged. Back to being disengaged. That still was on being disengaged. But has anybody ever been so disengaged in a marriage, you know, deep in the throes of a separation or a divorce, but you weren't disengaged enough to stop getting it in with your soon-to-be ex?
Yeah, again, it's an oxymoron.
What's the oxymoron, Andrew?
That's why she gonna be the ex.
Say what you said again, Rodney.
I mean, the marriage is dissolving. It's going, you know, down the hill. You know, it's. You're in the throes of a separation or, you know, soon to be divorced, but you weren't disengaged enough to stop getting it in with your soon to be ex.
I believe that happens more than you know.
Thank you. Thank you, brother.
I think it's happened. I'm not saying, I don't know. I mean, I never, but. I've heard on the radio where them women be calling in old Steve Harmon, and they still doing it. So I know it's happening.
See, the real truth, Rodney, is that problems in the sex life are barometers of what's going on in the marriage. Very few people have a great sex life and a crappy marriage.
Say that again. You said very few people have a crappy sex life.
No, I said sex is a barometer of the health of the marriage. We'll have a great sex life and a crappy marriage.
Yeah. I can believe that.
Well, what's a great sex life? I'm curious.
How does that map back to Rodney's statement?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, you can't have a great sex life emotionally involved. If you're just pounding it, I mean, it's two dogs humping in the yard. A great sex life is an emotional experience and a physical and a spiritual experience. And if you're just humping, you can hump the stripper down the street.
Mm.
So it's no intimacy. The intimacy is lost.
I mean, in going through a divorce, I'm going to tell you what, you know, I mean, you got physical needs. And I remember one time, you know, my ex-wife came over and, I mean, it was like, all right, you done? She's like, all right, I'm done. She got up, you know, walk out the door, I feel like leaving $100 on the table.
Wow.
So you bust a nut, but you know what? You don't feel like you, you know, you, I mean, it's literally like prostitution. It's, and you're like, damn. After a while, you just feel like, I don't even want to do it.
Yeah.
But I want to rewind a bit and go back to technology and our permanent state of distraction. You know, do y'all think that, you know, we're talking about being disengaged. Do we need to try just unplugging sometimes? I mean, an example would be when your kids are in the car, you know, do you spend the whole time listening to the radio or talking on the cell phone? Or do you actually try to engage your kids in a healthy conversation?
I'm going to tell you something funny. And you mentioned that, Rodney. We were on a cruise this past week. And every cruise I've ever been on, they do this thing called the not-so-newlywed game. And I don't know if y'all been on a cruise. You probably know what I'm talking about. And they always have a newlywed couple, a couple that's been married, you know, 5-6 years. And then they always try to pick a couple that's been married 40 or 50 years. Saddest thing, they asked the couples, you know, some of y'all might not remember this, but when I grew up, there was a thing called the newlywed game.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they'd ask questions and then, you know, they separate them and all this. The couples that were newlywed and been married for 6 years, they asked this question and they said, what's the first thing your husband touches in the morning? So it was newlywed, and the couple has been married for 6 years. Both the wives said the same thing, his cell phone.
Which was totally the wrong answer.
No, that was, and the men came on, and they agreed with it. They said my cell phone.
My wife would get that wrong. She would say the remote, but that's not the first thing.
That, I mean, that's a paradigm shift that's really sad, that people are so attached to their cell phone, the first thing they grab in the morning is the cell phone. And I thought, wow. And a couple have been married 50 years, it was something different, you know. He didn't think about a cell phone, you know. But, I mean, the newlywed couple and the couple have been married for 6 years, that's the same thing the men grab, the cell phone. And, I mean, think about that.
Well, I do grab mine, so I'm guilty of it, but my alarm's on my cell phone. My alarm's about to wake me up in the morning.
You
gotta
turn it off.
So I got to grab it, right.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah,
what does it say about a relationship if that's the case?
Mm-hmm.
We live in 2012. Technology is a major part of our functioning. While we're asleep, there is a whole other half of the world that's awake, and things are happening, and many of us are so connected to the world international that while you were asleep for 12 hours, or for 8 hours, things were happening. What does it say about your relationship if the first thing you grab is your cell phone?
It says a lot, you know, because...
Does it say that I'm disengaged?
Not necessarily, but it could. I mean, you know, sometimes I ride with my radio off because my daughters like to talk a lot, but... You know, other times I pop in a DVD and give them some headphones so that I can have a hands-free cell phone conversation while I'm riding around the town. But I think it says a lot, and I want y'all to hear this briefly.
Well, Rodney, let me say this one thing, because that other brother that just mentioned, he was talking about with you being disengaged. But I guess if you were to say hello to your wife or good morning to your wife and then grab the cell phone, is there a time limit? Is there a threshold on what would be considered disengaged? Because someone might say, well, if I say good morning to my wife, then grab my cell phone, that's rude and that's disengaged. But then another person is saying, if I grab my cell phone first and don't say nothing to my wife, that's disengaged. So is there a threshold or You know, do we set some type of time limit on what we need to do? Is there an hour that's supposed to be spent or half hour supposed to be spent with our family or, you know, wives, daughters, sons, whatever, or in prayer with God or whatever it is that we're supposed to do first in the morning before we're
That reminds me of a movie, When Harry Met Sally. I don't know if y'all ever seen that. That might be. But it's funny. He says, you know, the oddest feeling is after you make love to a woman, when it's over, you're wondering, how long do I have to hold her? 5 minutes? An hour?
Does she fall asleep?
She falls asleep. How long do I have to lay here and hold her? Can I get up and slip out?
No, until it gets too hot, and y'all start sticking to each other.
Well, I got to tell y'all about me. And, you know, this is right up my alley, actually. But I want y'all to hear this. Now, that was my two daughters. You know, one thing I continue to notice is that I'm not fully engaged with my own children. You know, sometimes when they talk, I simply don't hear them, or worse, when they do talk, I can appear to be listening to them as I'm thinking about something else, or worse, twiddling with my cell phone or on my computer. But I actually didn't realize the intense hurt that my children felt when I make the choice to talk on the phone or to be on my laptop instead of paying attention to them. But my kids have unfortunately just learned how to deal with it. And I don't know if any of you can relate to this, but, you know, do your kids, you know, act out in order to demand that attention back that you're not giving them because you're on your cell phone, you're on the computer, you're doing it, whatever it is you're doing. Or they just suck it up and learn how to deal with it like my kids have. You know, they told me, they said, Daddy, you're always on the phone. That's what they told me. I was like, wow.
So I don't get that, like, as direct as that. I still have pretty young children. So I have an eight-year-old son and a three-year-old daughter. But my children are very independent, right? So I make it a practice that when I'm coming home, I don't walk in the house talking on the phone. I'm going to get out the phone, driveway in the garage, I get in the house. Because I know either they're up or they're going to want to see Daddy walk in the house. But we can be home, literally, and my wife and I and my two children are home, and all four of us are doing something different in a different part of the house.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Literally. And that's fine for all parties involved. Right? I agree with Rodney. You know, at some point, sometimes I do feel disengaged. I'm one of those folks that I'm always on my phone. I'm always on my iPad. Yes. I wake up in the morning and I'm checking everything, email, text message, Twitter, Facebook, all of that, before my morning gets started.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And sometimes I feel like I miss vital moments in their preparation to get out to go to school and for me to get to go to work. Because I spend that 45 minutes in the morning catching up on what I missed for the 8 hours that I'm asleep.
Mm. Yeah, because like you said earlier, I mean, the world keeps going. When you're asleep, there's people still on Facebook.
Yeah.
You know, it's stuff going on. Just because you're asleep, you know, doesn't mean the world is asleep. But you said something interesting, and you know, regarding, you know, different kids. Can we be disengaged with one of our children, but not necessarily with the other? As you heard, my daughters, neither one of them are. I mean, they're independent to a sense, but at the same time, they're like, Daddy, can you play with me and get off your phone? You know, they're constantly, Daddy, put your phone down. You're always on the phone. But is it possible to be disengaged with one independent, quote-unquote child versus another, you have to be more engaged with them. You have to be more, you know, everything has to be off and attention is totally on them. Is that?
Well, I mean, I think you definitely know your children, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my son is very independent. He'll be in his room and he'll read and be on his computer or, you know, his Game Boy or whatever, and be there for a substantial long time, right? You know, 4 or 5 hours, and he's good with that. My daughter will hang around for an hour, but then she'll come up for air, right?
Mm-hmm.
She'll come make sure that there are folks that are still around. She might ask a couple of questions. She might want you to engage with her some more. So I think between my two children, my daughter is younger, and so I think because of that, she kind of commands a little bit more attention. But you know your children, right? And I don't think both of our children, you know, kind of requires the same attention to be engaged. And they don't get it. They don't get the same thing because they're both two very different individuals.
Yeah, I mean, they feel a little less worthy every time you take that phone call, pull out your tablet or your laptop, you know, whatever it is. But, I mean, do you guard your time off from work? I mean, when you're home, are you fully at home or are you, you know, wasting precious quality family time watching TV, surfing the net, or even working from home? You know, do you guard your time from work? I mean, what would happen? You know, what would happen if you didn't check Facebook or your personal email for 1 week? That's hard, huh?
No, not personal email, but work email. I mean, that I know there was a time when I was managing a service center that, man, my phone would ring every 5 minutes. And it drove my family crazy, but I was somehow able to balance it out because I just delegated everything out, but they would still call, and I would just take the 5 minute call and then get back to what I was doing.
And but, do you think that, you know, when your children grow up, you think they'll mimic these same behaviors with their children?
Well, I mean, there's good positive and bad positive things about what you do. I mean, you're showing your kids that you're responsible for your work, that you take care of family. And take care of family means you got to do what you got to do with your work. And then you pick your own dreams. You know, your kids didn't pick your dreams. Your wife didn't pick your dreams. So if your dream is to mop floors every day so you can be home, then your dream is to mop floors every day and be home. But, if your dream is to be an NBA basketball player, that means you're going to be traveling 82 you know, games out of the year. You're not going to be there. So it just depends on what your dreams are, and then you have to kind of mold your kids around that because they're going to have their own dreams. There's what we got to understand is we want our kids the best. We want our kids to even be better than what we are. So you got to show them how to balance out their careers. I mean, and that's what school is all about, is that how they need to balance out their work with if they have extracurricular activities, out of school, their homework, because you have to actually mold them for the world. And the world.
And to be honest, I mean, I think just to be transparent, for me, where I am now is I can see us being a very different place in 5-7 years in terms of our children will be older, will be a whole lot further in our careers, right? Like right now, I'm always working. The only time I don't work is literally if we're out of the country on vacation and we don't get service, and or if I'm sick. And so it's funny, my daughter walked upstairs the other day and she said, I was just kind of chilling at home, and she was like, "Are you sick, Daddy?" Because I wasn't working. Right. And I realize that, you know, it's not always going to be that way.
right? Because gradually, yeah, as you get older, yeah, you have to show them some balance, right? But I feel like I'm in the process now of even learning that balance for myself.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I don't know if y'all know about the 60-minute anchor, Mike Wallace, that died this past week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
93 years old.
Yeah.
And he did an interview a few years back and asked him, you know, what regrets he had in his life. And he asked him a lot of different questions. And he said, well, you know what? He said, my grandson, you know, sat down and asked me, you know, what would I change about my life? And he said the same thing that so many people say. He said, I wish I had spent more time with my family. Nobody on their deathbed ever says, I wish I spent more time at work.
Mm.
Think about that. Okay? I'm going to tell you. and I own my own company, and I understand. Believe me, I understand. You know, but if it takes you more than 40 hours to do it, you're doing it wrong. Trust me.
Good words.
Family is so much more important than that extra dollar, than that extra this, the extra that. It really is. And mm-hmm. and they're there for such a short time. I'm on the other side of it now. I got grandbabies. My youngest one is leaving the house literally in a month. And you don't get that time back. When they leave, it's over. You have such a short time with those babies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I'm telling you from both sides of it. When they leave, it's over. You know, nobody ever says, man, wish I went to that other meeting. Wish I had spent more time on that project. And you know, I don't care how valuable you think you are, bro, you can be replaced. Okay? And you guys that work for a company, you think you're assets. Let me tell you something. From the ownership side, you are a liability. You can be replaced.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get a balance. And you can say, oh, Andrew, you crazy. You don't. I'm telling you. You are a liability. You are not an asset. You can be replaced.
And let me piggyback on that, too, Andrew. Great words. Brother said earlier that, you know, that the situation may change in 4 or 5 years, maybe 7 years. I've got two daughters that are in their 20s. And we went through a certain point where they didn't want me around because they were young teenagers. They had their own life. They had their own thing going on. You see, it wasn't really, you know, at the beginning it was a little offensive to me because I'm dad. But I had to understand. I had to figure it out. You know what I mean? No, they don't want me to hang out with them. No, I can't go with them to the movies like we used to do. You know what I mean? Whatever it was, they had their own life. So you are with these children now that are 3 and 4 and 5. And you know what I mean? It's going to change to the point where, you know, you're going to want to do stuff with them and they're not going to want to do it with you. And you may get offended like I did, but actually it's going to happen. It's inevitable. It's going to happen. So you got to take this time now because it's an hourglass. There's a window on it, and the door's going to close. And then just like Andrew said, and after that point, they're going to go to college, they're going to go somewhere else, hopefully, and then maybe they'll come back in their 20s, and then you'll try to rekindle and try to get that relationship going again like I'm doing now. You know, now they're in their 20s, I got to get on their schedule to do dinner and whatever the case may be and hang out with them. But there's going to come to a point where it's going to stop and you're going to want to make time with them and they're not going to be interested. So just be on the lookout for that.
Good words, good words. And as we get close to open mic time, you know, just to close this up, good words, fellas, but what's the best way, you know, to approach disengaged dads to try to help them change their ways? You know, I mean, we're on here, you know, occasionally sometimes. We're on here every week, you know, but, you know, would a disengaged dad's pride and ego cause them to be reluctant to receive any advice?
you know, how do we approach a disengaged dad and try to get them to, you know, change the world? What do we do? What do
you know, do? Unfortunately, Rodney, I really think that their life has to crash. Because all the words of wisdom that I heard was like, man, you don't understand. I got this. They're always going to be here. My wife's going to be here. My family's going to be here. Or you know what? I'm a soldier. I'm going to be all right. The bottom line, and I'm sad to say, I really think they're going to have to crash before they realize what they've lost.
Yeah, because I think we all know somebody that's slowly become disengaged. And what I mean by that is that we know somebody that wasn't always disengaged, you know, but got too focused on his career, making money or whatever, you know, another interest, you know, whatever it was, but he wasn't always disengaged. But now you see him, it's like, man, what are you doing? What are you doing?
Well, I think what it will take is, I don't know if I think if they will have to necessarily crash, but it takes conversations and forums like this. Right, because by just us exchanging and hearing feedback, I know that it's intended. The intention of the feedback is to help and
yes.
not to cause hurt, even though it might be hurt. It might hurt a little here,
yeah. Yeah.
but
yeah.
the intention is good, and so you can receive it because you know where the intention is. So it takes
sure.
forums like this. I know a good buddy of mine. You know, he has two children around. You know, the same age. And we literally occasionally will get together. And he happens to be my neighbor, right? And, you know, we've been friends for years. And we'll sit and we're like, dang, nobody ever told us that fatherhood would be like this.
Wow.
Nobody told us what to expect or what to do. So while I might look back now and say, you know what, I would have done that differently if I get to do it again from last month or last year. Right. All we really have, right, is each other to say, all right, we didn't do it right the first time. Let's try to do it right the second time.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And we are literally growing as fathers while our children are growing up.
Mm. There it is. There it is.
Right.
Wow.
I see and Rodney knows a little bit about this. I'm great with teenagers.
Yeah.
Great. I don't see a knucklehead teenager that I can't connect with or a perfect teenager that I can't connect with, right? And so as I'm going through the process with my children now who are, again, preschool and elementary school age, it's almost in my mind, I'm like, things will get better when they turn teenagers. Now I have a fairly, I mean, I would describe my relationship with my children as pretty engaged. There's some disengaged moments. Right, and I heard what the brother just said. You know, if you can't do it in 40 hours, then you're really not. And I look at my job. I am a liability because I definitely can be replaced. Right, but so much time is spent trying to build a legacy for a family. Right, that what I'm hearing is that you miss the family in the process of building a legacy.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And you brought up something major, bro. I don't even know if you realized it, but you talked about this forum here. And, you know, what about the disengaged and disappearing dads that used to be part of this thing we call household stress? And why I say that is because behind the scenes, you know, what you may not know is that this thing takes a lot of work behind the scenes. We send emails, text messages. We're on Facebook, phone calls, face-to-face conversations. And we track the numbers around this place.
Uh-huh.
And
uh-huh.
back in 2009, we've been on here since 2009. You know, we're grateful for that. But back in 2009, we averaged over 20 brothers on this line every night. 2009. Now we fast forward to 2012 because we track the numbers. We're down 50%. We get about maybe 10, 11, 12 guys on an average night. household stress. The brother says a great form. We're helping each other. But the numbers have gone down. Why do y'all think that is? The brothers that have tapped into household stress have joined into the conversations that we've had and the level of conversation that we have. Now, sometimes the host, like me, goes too far. But really, the conversations that we have are really, it hits home. You know, and it's real talk. It's clean. And it's a positive outlet. But why do y'all think in 2009 we had over 20 brothers strong every night, man? Just, you know, we couldn't shut them up. It's too many guys. Now we're averaging 10, 11 guys. And
we
send out. I don't know about that, but, I mean, we send out, I think I counted on Sunday, we sent out over 100 emails on Sunday and over 100 text messages on Tuesday. Right before the show.
And if you add in Facebook and on the and it goes to all of our viewers, you're over 1,000. And, you know,
over
1,000 people.
Over 1,000. And we can barely get a few guys on here to just get some, as Tony always said, get some training. Forget the on-the-job stuff. Get some knowledge. Get some stuff that, you know, you ain't going to get anywhere else. Well, we can't get them. They're disengaged. Why is that?
Why?
Wow.
And just to add into that, I mean, we know guys that are going through this thing, and we make
You just talked about it.
Just
talked about it.
Just to get them on the phone so we can help them out, and they won't get on the phone. We say, you know, our call is just for you. We can't. There's a reason why we picked this topic. It was for you. And, you know, come on, get on the call, man. And it's like, you know, it's like I told folks sometimes, I said, us men, we're funny. I watch First 48 all the time. Everybody mm-hmm. wants to be a thug in front of everybody, show that you're the man and everything. And then when you get behind them closed doors, you crying like a little baby.
Yeah, get in that room.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Put that hot light on you.
Yeah, he's
probably something else, isn't it?
Yeah. And there's probably a couple of different reasons on that. I think one could probably very much be that some guys are maybe anticipating or would like to see maybe a professional on it, not understanding
okay.
that we are all professional husbands or have been or you know what have you. Cause that's what the call is about.
Yes, sir.
You know, maybe not professional psychologists, so to speak, but we all understand marriage
mm-hmm.
based on the invite, you know, those who've been married or are married. So you know, that's one thing. Maybe you get on in a little, you know, well, okay, what are these guys going to tell me?
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm also in a marriage, you know, and could have the wrong perception or the wrong attitude coming in.
Yes.
And absolutely. And then, you know, another reason you have guys who are looking for a forum. I think we've said this earlier on. I know that are looking for a support group. They just want a group that they can get on a call and they can bash women about. They don't want to hear about what they have to do or how they need to adjust. They just want to be able to say, yeah, you know, women be tripping. They do this and they do that, and looking for that type of forum, and then find out that's not this forum. I mean, we might
right.
discuss some things about what women do, what women don't do, but at the end of the day and at the end of the show, it's really how do you improve you? How do we improve
yeah.
us? So, you know, I think there's a couple of different things there on probably why that is. You know, I think every good, it's lonely at the top, right?
Yeah.
Every great thing, you know, never starts with a multitude of individuals.
Wow.
And, you know, I'm going to echo what the brother just said. It's difficult when there is an issue and you know deep down in your soul that it's somebody else's fault. And then you're brought to the realization that it's really you contributing to the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And brothers don't do well with hearing that. Right?
Yeah,
we don't do well with, I said, we can come on and bash women. We can come on and talk about, you know, all the things that they do or don't do. But when the question is asked,
what are you doing to contribute to it, right?
Mm.
What foundations mm-hmm. did you set as the head of your household? What expectations that you didn't fulfill, you know, going
mm-hmm.
into the marriage that resulted in the divorce, and now you're fighting over the children? And when you're hearing those questions, you know, brothers want to back away from that. I mean, this is kind of like confession. You know what I'm saying? You're talking
mm-hmm.
on the phone, and you might or might not know the person that that's responding to you or providing insight, advice, or suggestions,
sure.
right?
Yeah.
And yeah, I think for some brothers, you know, it takes them to build up to that. And Rodney knows this because I mentioned it to you on a number of occasions where it, I mean, I was on the phone. I came on for about maybe 2 months without saying anything on the phone. I just listened for like 2-3 hours, right? Because it was one, you know, I like to kind of know what I'm getting into. Two, engage in the conversation.
Yeah.
And it was interesting enough that I stayed on and listened and had, you know, felt comfortable enough to participate, right?
Sure.
And so, but I don't know how many brothers are going to give the time to do that. I've extended the invitation. I tell folks about this all the time. You know, to tonight, you know, a bunch of brothers, I don't know where folks calling from, but we're on the line and we're having a good conversation. And it just happened that I'm in a PTA meeting. And one brother came up to me and was like, yeah, you on the phone. I didn't know if I could admit it or deny it.
Yeah.
But it ended up that this is somebody that I know very well, right?
Yeah.
But I didn't know the person was on the phone.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think for many brothers, man, it's just, you know, taking a step out there and becoming vulnerable and be willing to hear, listen, and learn from, you know, from other
yeah.
brothers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's also the Tony Soprano syndrome. I don't know if y'all watched the Sopranos, but Tony Soprano was in therapy. He's a gangster. He was in therapy.
Yeah.
And he always wanted to hide it because he knew people would think he was weak, and that would cause them, you know, to ridicule him, maybe even kill him. But, you know, a lot of brothers feel like, man, I don't need that. You know, they
yeah.
get on call, they hear, you know, the discussions, and they're like, that's nice, but I don't really need that. But what they don't understand is that, you know, there's nothing wrong with duplication. If people are doing things the right way and it's working, you know, you might want to try that too. So, you know, it's kind of just continuing to talk and share our stories, our success with it, and hopefully people will continue to give it a chance.
Yeah, good
right.
Words. And that's
and you know,
the brother.
Okay, go ahead.
I just wanted to say that's the brother that was at the PTO meeting.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Rodney.
Yeah. No,
that was
Tony.
Tony.
Yeah. Oh, that was
yeah.
Tony.
Yeah. I got a confession to make after listening to this.
Okay.
I do. It's gonna be real. It's gonna be crazy.
Yeah.
I was
gonna
say,
go ahead.
Offer.
Yeah. No. Go ahead.
Listen.
Yeah. Get it out.
My first marriage, I could do no wrong. I mean, I knew that I was doing wrong, but in my mind, I was justified for everything that I did,
mm-hmm.
and you couldn't tell me nothing. And back then, I would have not gotten on this call right now because I probably
wow.
didn't. I didn't think I needed it.
Mm-hmm.
Like you could have told me about this call back then, I'd have been like, "Yeah, whatever." Just like
the
when people came and told me, "Hey, you need to come to church with me," and blah blah. I was like, "Yeah, I ain't going to church." Same thing. I would not have gotten on this call. Then I got divorced, and then I started going to church and I started listening to people's testimony. And that's what made me realize how screwed up I really was.
Mm.
As a husband, as a father, the whole nine yards, I was really screwed up because it was my way. I didn't want to hear what nobody else had to say. I wasn't good at taking advice, yada, yada, yada. So now getting on these calls, it's kind of different for me because now I've learned to listen. I've learned to take advice, hopefully give a little bit of advice. But again, I also sympathize with those who were like me, because there's brothers out there now that they're the real, in their mind, head of their household, and nobody's going to tell them how to do anything. And, you know, men sometimes were headstrong, and I was one of those guys, and I would have never gotten on a call like this. So that's probably what we have to deal with people that are saying, no, I don't have an issue. I'm all right. I'm a professional husband. Why would I get on a call like this? But just like somebody said, sometimes you got to put your guard down and just try it out, because we're not professionals. I mean, right, because we are professionals. We're professionally married, but we get information from the people that call in. We learn from the people that call in. We don't come. We may come with a script of questions to ask, but that's it.
Yeah.
We ignite the conversation, and then our callers will add the juice to it, pretty much. And that's the dynamic of this. But that's my confession. I wouldn't have been on this call either, you know, my first time.
And that's great words, because what y'all don't know is that I prepare a lot, and I used to come in with my paper stapled. You know, this is the order. And, you know, Tony's always said, you can't do that, Rodney. You can't. It's not going to go in the order, you know, page number one, page number two, page number three. So now I come in just with the research, and it's all over my desk, you know, right now. Because it depends on where y'all are going. So I just follow, you know, we create the meeting, but something sparks this, and we go in that direction. But I used to come in with my paper stapled. Okay, we're going to go to question number one, then we're going to go to question number two. Then we're going to turn over to page number two, then we're going to turn over to page number three, and that's how we're going to have this thing here. And that was, you know, I had to learn that, no, you know, I'm just here to sort of keep this train on the tracks, you know.
That's it. Facilitate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, facilitate. And, you know, I get out y'all's way. You know, I get out y'all's way. And, you know, I want to, you know, shut this thing down and flip over to open mic. I do have three more questions that Rodney brought up about an hour ago, but we have to go there. We cannot get off of this phone without going there. And I want to talk about, and just three questions, just three brief questions, we'll get to the conclusion. But I want to talk about, can you be disengaged when it comes to spirituality? And before I want you to answer the question, I'm going to share my story. My wife, you know, I love her to death. She's, you know, she knows the word. I mean, she just amazes me, her knowledge and depth of the word and of the Bible. So I have two daughters. You've heard, you know, them. I played a little thing. I'm always on my phone or whatever. But my oldest daughter is 8 years old. She'll be 9 in 2 weeks. My wife has taken the liberty to start talking to her about baptism, about accepting Jesus into her life as her personal Savior. And this is, you know, just we riding, you know, from the store, or just, you know, she's talking to her. And I'm sitting there, and my background, I am not that, you know, you may think I'm deep, but I'm not that deep when it comes to, you know, the Bible and faith and spiritual, because that's not what I lived as a child. So I'm hearing this, I'm sitting there, and my wife she's engaging in our daughter about her spirituality. It's like, okay, you're 8 years old. You need to accept Jesus into your life to be your personal Savior. You know, and she's talking to her about what it means to be saved. And I'm sitting there. I'm speechless. Not that I'm offended, but I'm speechless because she is engaged spiritually into our daughter. And I'm just sitting there like, man. And another example, just, you know, we just had Easter 2 weeks ago. I'm literally making breakfast on a Saturday morning. I think we were listening to the radio. The TV may have been on. You know, the wife stops and was like, come here, girls. I need to talk to you. And I'm like, what's going on? You know, she didn't brief me. I thought they were in trouble or something. I don't know. You know, so I'm cooking, baking eggs. I'm in the kitchen, and she proceeds to turn off the TV, the radio, whatever was on, sits them down and tells them a story about Easter, what it means, how we're going to church every night this week for Holy Week, what we're celebrating, Good Friday, you know, I mean, the whole nine. And I'm just sitting there, speechless. because she has jumped in and is engaged and telling my daughters, like, look, this is the story of Eve. And it was short. It probably took no more than 5 minutes, guys. And then she was like, all right, y'all go ahead and play. Came on back into the kitchen. And I was beside myself because I was so ashamed of myself. I get on here with y'all and mix it up and, you know, I'm this and I'm that. And here my wife is the one taking the lead on my children's spirituality.
No, you can't think of it that way. You can't. You can't blame yourself for that. A man's job also is to delegate. And if she's the one that's grounded, if she's better for that than you, then so be it.
That's all right.
It's all right. What would you have said to them? Would you have gotten the book out? Would you put a video on? I mean, think about it. How would you have handled it?
I don't even know.
It better than her?
No. No.
Okay.
Absolutely
so
not.
Job well done. Thank you, honey. Thank you, honey. Honey,
good luck.
Job well done. Thank you. Good looking out.
And T-Hawk, you say that. I didn't even think of it because I was just so disgusted with myself.
You still got time.
Okay, listen.
Let me nip all that in the bud for you real quick.
Okay.
You married her, didn't you? Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Enough said.
She got your back. That's all you need to know.
Well, not only that, but you married her. That's your bride. That's who you chose to be your bride.
Yeah.
Think about that now. Good choice or bad choice?
Great choice, yeah.
Great choice, my man.
Can I ask a question, though? And I agree with the other two brothers just said. Right?
Go ahead.
But were you beside yourself because she was the one sharing this with your children? Or you realized that your depth of knowledge wasn't what she was sharing? Or you didn't have the same understanding or exposure that she did?
I think it's more the latter, but I think that I was beside myself because I thought that was, I viewed that as that I should be the one doing that. As the head of household, as the spiritual leader, the priest of my household, you know, I'm the one who's supposed to, you know, tell them about, okay, it's time for you to start thinking about getting saved. Here's the Easter message in a succinct, articulate way to an 8 and 4 year old. I thought it that way, but Tony made a great point, is that my wife is a teacher.
She is a teacher.
That's what she does by day, and that's what God ordained her to do. And when she came home from kindergarten, I think it was after the first day of school, she came back and told her mother from in kindergarten, she said, when I grow up, I'm going to be a teacher. So she knew her anointing at kindergarten. First day, she said, I know what I want to be when I grow up. So she's working in, you know, her anointing, and she made it so easy. I mean, she just sat them down like, look, young ladies, you know, this is the Easter, the Good Friday, and then boom, 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 go ahead and play. I was like, wow. And like Tony said, I would have been grabbing a book, I would have been getting out the DVD, I would have been clumsy, and it would have took 20 minutes, and the girl's like, can we play, you know. But I'm appreciative that she did it, and I need to thank her, because Tony said I need to go thank her, because she is my bride, and
My wife writes out every bill that comes in the house. It doesn't make me less of a man. I still got to go make the donuts. Frank, if it was up to me, I'd have a 400 credit score. And with that, you know what I'm saying, and understanding, you know, understanding our strengths and weaknesses. I mean, nobody has it all, and I thank God for the strengths that my wife brings to the table.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
And again, I agree with the brothers. I think my push for you, Rodney, though, is you asked the question is the question that you asked is whether or not we are disengaged spiritually.
Yes.
And so, if there's a feeling that, you know what, I'm not as grounded, then just as much as your wife sat your two daughters down and spoke to them and helped them to understand further what this is about. It was an opportunity for you, not right then and there, because that was for your two daughters, but to ask the question of yourself, do I need to be more engaged spiritually just for myself? Right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you talk about the fact that, you know, the way that you were brought up, you and so forth, but it's really, I think it's a revelation for you to say, you know what? If I was called to task, not necessarily to do to my daughter, for my daughters, but to do for anybody else, would it be as smooth as I just saw that what my wife did with my two daughters?
I'll add this last little bit, I guess, because everyone has some good words. I think.
Yeah.
But since everybody jumping in, I want to, like, I can't add something. I want to fill a part. So I would just say, and I think it's in long lines of what everyone was saying, but you say you're a king and priest in your house, which you should be, which you are called to be. And ministry is more than just sitting in a classroom and going over scriptures, and I'm not belittling that aspect of it, but ministry is more about the action and the lifestyle. Not taking that away from your wife, not saying that your wife is not doing it, but it's more about the action and the lifestyle than it is sitting down and breaking down scripture. So it doesn't mean that you're still not the king or the priest of your household. It doesn't mean that you don't have a profound ministry in the household and you're not working the role that you believe that you should be working as the head or as the man of the house and as a godly man of the house. If you're living that godly lifestyle in the house and being that husband, you're being that father, you're being that provider, you're being that protector and so forth and so on in that household, then they are learning much more on a day-to-day basis than they are on a weekly or every other day or whatever times that, you know, they might sit down and have a conversation about some scriptures that's in the Bible. Again, not taken away from it, not watering it down, but your lifestyle speaks more volumes than sitting down and going through the scriptures.
Yeah. That's good words, Rodney, and just to tie in what you said with what Andrew said earlier, I want to ask you this, and, you know, also to the group as well, do y'all think that if a man had a poor relationship with his father, could that be the reason why that same man struggles to form a relationship with God the Father, that they have a sense of bitterness there? Is that possible? Poor relationship with his own father, which leads to the struggle to form a relationship with God the Father.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, I could be wrong. Go ahead. I don't think so. But go ahead.
Anybody?
I think absolutely. I think it can absolutely. I don't say that's direct result of anything, but I think
sure.
It can, just for the simple fact when you start utilizing the term of endearment of father, then absolutely you could already have some salty taste in your mouth, depending on who your father was. Again, this doesn't apply to everybody, but certain circumstances, some individuals could have a taste in their mouth just about the term of the word father. So it could be, but, you know, I'd probably lean more towards Tony and just saying that I don't think it has a direct. I think it's more an indirect.
And I get what you're saying too, Rodney, but it could also have another effect on it when a person could have an estranged relationship with their father, and then they say, well, now my real father who is in heaven. And that's the one that's got my back. And they can pretty much cancel out the biological father and say, well, yeah, he wasn't really who he was, but my father that's in heaven is my real father.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. Because God can never be categorized as a disengaged dad.
No.
And, you know, but why I brought that question up, fellas, is that my father, struggles with his relationship with God. Now, he's had some, you know, some peaks, but he's in a valley right now. And rewinding the tape, he didn't have a relationship with his father. So that's why, that's where the question is rooted in. It's rooted in my father, you know, the fact mm-hmm. that he was raised by his grandmother. His father and his mother were never married. So, I mean, that's where that question was rooted in. But I totally agree that it's not in all situations. You can't blanket it. But, you know, even Jesus had a unique relationship with God who sent him into the world to die for each one of us. And if you recall, when Mary and Joseph found Jesus as a boy in the temple and told him, it's like, we've been looking for you. Does anybody remember how Jesus replied? I know you pastors remember.
I have to be about my father's business.
There you go. He's like, why are you searching for me? Didn't you know I'd be in my father's house?
Mm-hmm.
That's what Jesus said as a boy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and just get y'all out of here. Final question. Then we roll this thing over. Maybe, here's the final question. Maybe your father or father figure was a true household, a shining example of integrity and godly leadership, or maybe not. But the $64 million question is, what kind of dad are you? Can you look at yourself and see your own shortcomings and failures, or do others have to point them out to you? And I think Brother T-Hawk made the nice contrast. He talked about himself. He said the old me versus the new me. I wouldn't have been on here with y'all, but the new me is. But, you know, what kind of dad are you?
You know, I do my best to speak as positive, speak life, even when I'm speaking it about myself. Now, I can be my worst critic, but at the same time, you know, and again, I know it's this hour, so,
yeah.
But the Bible says that, you know, that Satan is the accuser of the brethren.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I refuse to allow him to use me to speak against myself. So
wow.
I'm not going to accuse myself of being a terrible dad or feeling guilty or ashamed or having regrets of not doing this and not doing that. I constantly kind of affirm that I'm doing a good job because you're not going to hear from everybody. And that's not just in the house. That's anywhere. But since we're speaking about the household, you know, you might not hear from your kids. You might not hear from your wife or whatever. So, you know, the song Be Encouraged.
Yeah,
you know, you sometimes you just or the Psalms, you know, where David just has to encourage himself, and I think I take that as very realistic and very practical that you have to do that. So I try to choose not to be too hard on myself. I know that I have some shortcomings, and I know some things I could have done differently, but I try not to dwell on those things because they don't do nothing to eat you up. There's nothing you can do about them.
Mm.
Mm.
I think that sums it up. That, I mean, that's great words. That's great words. That sums it up. Thank you for that, Rodney. And thank you, brothers. It's time for the conclusion, but don't go anywhere. We got open mic. I do have a brief question. The conclusion, your favorite part. Experts agree that the disengaged parenting style is the most damaging. Disengaged parents are often neglectful and unattached and leave schools and society to be the parents. They not only fail to provide structure and rules, but they also fail to show love or foster an emotional connection. As a result, these children are at high risk for emotional and behavioral problems, academic difficulties, low self-esteem, and alcohol or substance abuse. Children of disengaged parents are the hardest to deal with. They are traumatized, neglected, and unmotivated and need a great deal of nurturing to get back on track. But from the biblical perspective, fatherhood is always seen within the context of marriage. At the very beginning of the creation of the world, God instituted marriage as an exclusive lifelong bonding of a husband and a wife. In the New Testament, marriage is proclaimed as a reflection of the relationship Christ has with his church. Marriage is a vital institution which needs protection by the government and a strong defense by the church. The antidote to disappearing fathers is promoting faithfulness in marriage and responsible fatherhood. And responsible fatherhood is not possible without sacrifice and commitment. A father does have a vital role in family life. He is the protector of his children as well as their role model, a helper and corrector. The notion of responsibility is crucial to the understanding of true fatherhood. Fathers are needed who are committed to Jesus Christ, who follow his way and aim to show his family the way. Our commitment to Christ will give us both identity and purpose. God calls us fathers to take a godly leadership role in the family. But since we all live in a fallen and broken world, there are no perfect fathers. If a father has morally failed, he must own up to it and seek healing and restoration. We all realize that as fathers, we can truly be faulty and fallible, as Rodney just said. As children of God, we have the privilege of calling him Father. We call God Father because Jesus taught us to do so. If men are going to return to responsible fatherhood, we must look at our heavenly Father and rely upon him. In John 5:19, Jesus even said, "The Son can do nothing by himself. He can do only what he sees his Father doing. Because whatever the Father does, the Son also does, for the Father loves the Son and shows him all that he does." God is our model of loving fatherhood, and Christ is the perfect image of the Heavenly Father. So, fellas, as you evolve into your role as a father over time, learn from your mistakes and grow through your experiences. Whether you realize it or not, every parent has a style of interacting with their children, and parenting style isn't determined by an isolated event like a moment of conflict or disagreement, but a parent's overall demeanor when engaging with their child. Whatever your style, your interactions undoubtedly have a profound impact on your child's future. Our 36th president, Lyndon Johnson, once said, and I quote, "History and instinct tell us that a society that does not encourage responsible fatherhood will pay for its failure in future generations," end quote. Johnson was right. Families need fathers who take responsibility and who refuse to abandon leadership in the home, the church, and in our society as a whole. Our society will collapse when fathers abandon their families. That concludes our show for the evening, fellas. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Verse Talk Show brought to you by Married Men on Talk. We hope that you enjoyed the show. You can join us again next Tuesday from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And next week's topic will be... fear. Fear. That's going to be good.
That's a good one.
For more information, please... yeah, fear, F-E-A-R. For more information, please feel free to visit both of our websites, householdstress.com and marriedmendonttalk.com. Those websites, again, householdstress.com and marriedmendonttalk.com.
You are now free to move about the country.